Blog Talk Radio.
I gotta get my groove on.
Brother Sharif, Brother Sharif, Brother Sharif, and Thor Ministry Radio. Brother Sharif and Thor Ministry Radio.
Dig this.
Ladies and gentlemen,
here we go again. How low can you go?
How y'all feel? I feel out there.
I know you're gonna dig this.
Okay, party people in the house.
Pump the volume.
Yeah, boy.
Are you ready for more with Thor Radio? Are you being harassed by debt collectors? Are you facing foreclosure?
Okay.
We'll bring the hammer down on your debt by using Thor strategies and tactics.
Okay.
Brother Sharif and Thor will educate you on the consumer protection laws, which will allow you to hammer away your debt. Get ready, reset, and restore with Thor Radio. Now, here is our own Brother Sharif.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Greetings, this is Thor Radio Network, a.k.a. Thor Ministry, a.k.a. Truth Radio, a.k.a. Trendsetters, a.k.a. Beat Your Debt Collectors. I'm your host and founder, Brother Sharif, also called the Lion of Judah. Wait a minute. Just wanted to make sure my throat was working. Today is August the 26th, 2014. We are live. We want to thank all of you for joining today on this great day in the month of gold, August. On this 26th day, in numerology terms, the number 8, which is a very significant number. Our call-in number is 657-383-0332, 657-383-0332. I want to first give all praises and honors to the Most High, because it is He that enables me and us to do all things, including this show, whereby we come together as a community and common unity to bless one another with information and education that will equip us to defend our economic stability and preserve our mental and emotional state from being disturbed and disheveled by unscrupulous debt collectors. I want to give all thanks to the Creator for allowing me to accomplish and fail at things that are necessary for me to do. So, we have a great show for you. Today is Trivia Tuesday. And Trivia Tuesday is a show designed for us to take examination of Dunning letters, which are the letters you receive from debt collectors demanding payment from you in some sort regarding an alleged debt. gives an opportunity for you to participate and demonstrate your skills and education that you may have learned otherwhere, other places, or here. But it gives you an opportunity to participate and call in. Once we do Trivia Tuesday, we select a letter, Dunning letter, from a host of letters we received here at the ministry, and we select a couple of them to go over. Our panel is here, Rudy, Layla, and Lori. Rudy will be co-hosting today's show. Layla will be providing you with the word of the day. And Lori will be giving you the direction of today. So I have the mother, I have the knowledge and the wisdom riding shotgun with Thor in the Thor mobile. I just want to send out from Thor and everybody here and all others a big prayer. Because as we know, the land of Babylon is in full effect. Babylon is the land of confusion. There is the overwhelming appearance of civil war against the people. And in my opinion, civil war is an internal war. I believe it internally resides in you and internally resides within the so-called borders of this country. Unfortunately, civil war is a vicious enactment in the outside world of the inner conflict that's going on within, and that is within us and within this country. I'm sure all of you know that there is no time for doubting your power. No time for doubting your spirituality. There is no time for hiding your cure. You got a stake in the world around you. No more time for closed minds, because a closed mind cannot be reasoned with. No matter how open-minded we believe we are, we all have various points of view that many times don't capture the larger picture. We all could be optimistic when things are going well, when the economy was going good, when we were had money hand over fist. But it takes a more courageous person to believe in ourselves when things get rough. And at this time, things are rough for a lot of people out there. There's a lot of hate going on. And understand this. All hatred begins as a self-hatred. You hate yourself first before you hate anyone else. I just wanted to give out a special prayer to those that are in need. That the Creator and the Most High will strengthen you internally and calm the civil war that is going on inside of you. Because if He does that, then the civil war that's going on the outside geographically will calm itself. All right, we got a couple of announcements to make before let me bring in my panel and bring in Rudy and let her do some driving here. We're going to make a few announcements after I bring them in. And we're pretty much going to get into the show. So, Rudy, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning. Hello, and happy Thor Day.
Good morning.
Welcome to Thor, where our focus is to educate, empower, and enlighten you with correct information. There is nothing being discussed here that is illegal, unlawful, prohibited, or immoral. We're just talking about what we're talking about, voids that are prohibited by law. We're reminded that the issues we face are not issues about one of us. It is about all of us. Collectively, we have come together to make a difference. Now, on another note, and this is very important, this is the disclaimer. We're not attorneys, lawyers, or judges, or experts in anything. There's no legal advice given, but we may discuss from time to time scenarios or possible situations and circumstances relating to problems of everyday life that some of us are faced with, and that problem is a major problem. That problem is debt. Our discussions are as if we were in those various dilemmas ourselves. Research is done by our experts, and information is shared for fun and entertainment and for comparison to share with others. Anything that you hear or read should always be verified until you're satisfied with your very own research. And that should be done before you recite it, you repeat it, or you write it. When in doubt, simply don't. And that's just a good word of advice. Please do your own due diligence and proceed with extra caution and care. Once again, welcome to Thor, and happy Thor Trivia Day. Welcome all.
Greetings, yes. All right, Layla, you have our word of the day for today.
Greetings, Thor family. We're going to have a thoracic time today with the Denning Letter Trivia. But as we continue and gain knowledge in the consumer protection laws, please let's keep in mind what Brother Sharif just said. You know, the war within us is exemplified in the outer world around us. So the war, there are actually two words today, and you've heard this phrase being repeated by Brother Sharif and Thor all the time, is character and behavior. So what I did, I've got the legal dictionary, and I just want to tell you, as we recite to you, what character says. So please be in mind that we need to keep this in tune with what we're going to be discussing today. Character, the aggregate of the moral qualities which belong to and distinguish an individual person, the general result of the one's distinguishing attributes. So basically, in layman terms, the mental and moral qualities distinctive to an individual. If we look at behavior, bear with me for a second, I just had it and I lost my place. Okay, behavior is the manner, let me just read this. Okay, the manner of having, holding, or keeping oneself, manner of behaving, whether good or bad, conduct, manners, carriage, or oneself with respect to propriety and morals. So basically, this is a psychologist said that, to keep it in simple terms, a disposition to express behavior, inconsistent patterns of functions across a range of situations. So as we receive these letters, we got to be thinking about the characteristics of the institutions that are sending these letters to us. How do we analyze them in accordance with the guidelines prescribed to us, you know, such as through the consumer protection laws? We've got the FDCPA, which is the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, entitled under 15 U.S.C. 1692. We have the Fair Credit Reporting Act, FCRA, 15 U.S.C. 1681, and we have the TCPA, also known as the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, which restricts the usage of telephone equipment, under 15 U.S.C. 227. So please be mindful during the broadcast today, and especially when we get to trivia time and we're reviewing these Denning letters, to take into consideration the character and behavior that these institutions are utilizing when they're sending these notifications out to us and calling us, by the way. So with that, back to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Great. Great information from Layla. Appreciate that. Lori.
Good morning, everyone. Hope everybody had a restful and wonderful weekend. It was a beautiful one here in Texas, really hot. Hot, hot, hot. But I just wanted to comment real quick. Whenever you were giving your prayer for the show and for everyone out there, you stopped at the point there on that you celebrated the your failures, allowing you to fail, and just that really just, I mean, it just all of a sudden, you know, kind of stopped me in my tracks as I was listening to you, and I just put my pen down while I was writing, and I thought, you know, how powerful that was, because, you know, our failures always lead to more success, and a lot of people get distracted by failures in life or attempts to move forward in whatever arena it may be, and you get discouraged by those failures. And maybe if you were to accept them and appreciate them and understand them for what they really are, they're lessons. And the teacher is teaching from that standpoint in enabling you to, you know, do an autocorrect or a self-correct. Anyway, I just wanted to comment on that real fast. Also, last week I started a little deal with everyone as far as pointing out a couple of things for you to look up on your own after we get off the broadcast and to really sit and think and reflect on how you can utilize some of the statutes in the FDCPA and read them, reread them, read every single word. So I want to continue that this week on 1692F1 in unfair practices. In 1692F1, it states the collection of any amount, including any interest, fee, charge, or expense incidental to the principal obligation, unless such amount is expressly authorized by the agreement creating the debt or permitted by law. So I hope everyone will maybe stop this week and really read that and let it penetrate with each and every word that's expressed there. And make use of it. That's it for me for the moment.
Great. Appreciate that. Great information coming from Lori, our researcher here at Thor Ministry, Thor Radio Network. She does a great job. And you should take very good notes when she speaks and jot those things down on your Thor tablet. I want to bring in the Yama and make a couple of comments. I want to thank everyone who was in attendance for our special Friday show this past Friday on American violence, or violence in America. It was a very good show. I want to thank all of the invited guests that appeared on the show and made their contributions and deposits of peace. Very interesting show. I received a lot of great feedback from that show. And we were asked to do a part two on Friday, having yet made the decision, but more than likely we may do a part two to that on Friday. That show is available in the archives here at Thor Radio. It was a very good show. I want to bring in the Yama, who I didn't get an opportunity on Friday to bring in and get her knowledge and wisdom about the subject matter, but, you know, we had a very packed show and a lot of visitors, and I tried to balance everybody and give everybody a reasonable amount of time to do their deposits. So just wanted to open up the line for the Yama. Yama, welcome.
Shalom, shalom, shalom. Family, kinfolk, shalom. See, Sharif, Friday, I wasn't available to listen to the program. I had a lot of personal business to take care of, to get things, you know, on the right path. So it wouldn't be overwhelming for me. And with the knowledge and the education and the truth that I've gotten from Thor Ministry, it helped me out a lot, because you know how to deal with you know how to deal with the not creditors, but when you go out and you're sending your money and they don't, they misinform you and they don't do the right thing, and you, and one thing about with me, I always persevere. If one person can't give me the answer, then give me the next person is higher than you. And if they're not there, give me their phone number and their name, let me call them. So
that's right.
And then another thing, my computer went down. I had to put it in the shop. I had to fight with the people because they didn't want to cover it to, put it back in order. So they told me 7 to 14 days. So right now I'm without a computer, but it should be all taken care of within that time frame. And even though I had to go to the top, because I don't stop. If I'm at the bottom, I have to get to the top of my answers. To get everything complete for me. And that's just the way, that's the way we're supposed to be. We never settle. We always persevere. And in our persevering, if we find out additional information, then we let go of the old information that took us that far, and then we get that new information, and we continue on. And so that's what I had to do for several different things. So I was busy Friday. And then I was going to listen to it on my computer, and then now my computer's not working. But when my computer's back up, I will listen to that program. I was very so much looking forward to hearing and participating. But, you know, I send all my family, my kin folks, I send them, you know, just the increase of the Creator, because that's what He does for us all day long. He never leaves us at the bottom. He's always rising us to the top in everything we do. And
that's right.
So I persevere all the time.
Thank you, Mother. You definitely do. And we thank the Creator for you and always your input and your words hold great impact upon our brains and our hearts. So appreciate you being here. Hopefully you enjoy the show. I'll try to come back to you later. But just wanted to get to you.
And I want to say, see, Sharif, be willing to change.
That's right.
Be willing to change. If we get information that we thought was, you know, we thought that the information was all we needed, and then we get additional information that might supersede the information that we had, then we have to change. We have to, you know, sometime when you're driving in a lane, when that lane goes down to one lane or two lanes, then you have to get in that lane. And so with information, when we get it, be willing to change. Do your research, find out it works, this is the truth, then you have to change that to whatever, that additional information that you're receiving. And I found that out within the last week. You have to be willing to change. When you hear something and you know it's going to be beneficial, you know it's going to elevate you, you know it's going to make you more spiritual than you was the day before, then you have to change. And that's what...
Indeed.
At Thor Ministry, that's what we're all about, getting the education, receiving more truth and more truth, and persevering and changing, yes, for the better.
Right. Yes,
I'd
ma'am.
I'd like to interject a thought here, if I may, at this point, based on what the Yama said. She mentioned something that would lead us all to think about senior abuse. She had to go from one position to another position to another position to get some help. Everybody on this call needs to realize that this is a family call, and you need to invite others on here who may not be having the exact same issue that you are, but yet they're having some issues, because the seniors are the ones who at least had or have all the wealth. So if they steal it from the seniors, there'll be nothing to pass down and leave a legacy to you. So keep that in mind, that there is senior abuse out here that is related to debt, and that steals your legacy for your young people.
That's right.
Yes.
Very good point. Yes, the two mothers, the Yama and Rudy, appreciate y'all input, and definitely we live to hear the words of wisdom coming from the mother, the matriarch, the centerpiece of our country. So we thank you. All right, I want to first give shout out to my chat room. We got Africa the Great, two guests, Law Six, said he's ready for Thor trivia. We're going to see. North Shore, Mr. Plani, Zaya, always ready, armored up, Thor ready. We look forward to y'all participation here in Thor Trivia coming up in the next hour. I got a couple of announcements to make. This Saturday we'll be doing a webinar, Saturday, August 30th, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's going to be on post-foreclosure methods and strategies for those of you that have already experienced foreclosure, allegedly. Those of you who have already had a judgment entered against you. We're going to discuss some of the ways you may be able to get those judgments set aside and be able to incorporate the consumer protection laws to aid you in doing so. We're going to have that on this Saturday. You need to email us at debtshow@yahoo.com to reserve your seat. You need to do that as soon as possible because our webinars fill up pretty quick. Okay, so we're going to go into all the information one may do. We're going to look back, show you how to look back and see where you can possibly find the standing to be able to challenge that judgment and demonstrate to the court that you have shown cause to do so. So this webinar was by request of several people that was in that situation and asked that Thor present the webinar on that particular subject matter. All right. Just also let you know we're having a special invited speaker and guest here at Thor Radio. I don't know what day we're going to schedule him for. It might be Wednesday or Thursday. But that guest is going to be Eddie Craig of Rule of Law Radio. Eddie Craig is one of the few pioneers I know that is well-versed and educated on many topics and subject matters, but specifically he focuses on constitutional and traffic issues, which is a form of debt collection. And as you know, Thor deals with all type of economics, and we're going to engage in a show with him. And I'm just telling y'all, he's a paralegal. He's been out there a while. He's a spiritual and religious man. And the man is, he appeals to Brother Sharif's ear. Whenever I get the opportunity to listen to him, I definitely become a student in his environment. So he's going to be here, and we're going to discuss a lot of issues going on. Eddie's able to swing the pendulum like I'm able to do and talk about other topics, but we're going to cover another area of debt collection and economic suppression, which is related to traffic and constitutional issues. So that'll be coming up. If you're not on the email, you probably wouldn't know about it, but email us at debtshow, D-E-B-T-S-H-O-W, @yahoo.com, and become a recipient on the contact list. I also want to thank all of our supporters and members and listeners for all of the emails we receive daily, which is tens of them. Just thanking Thor and for the information that we deliver here on the network, thanking us for the remedy we've supplied and was able to offer people to enhance and increase their economic stability. A lot of successes out there. I just don't take a lot of time to talk about them, but a lot of people getting a lot of success out there with the information that's being distributed here at Thor. And some of you wouldn't believe some of these successes that are out there. We're going to design a show just as a success show. Also want to say, give a shout out to my young Thor guns out there, a group of young men in their low 20s that educating themselves and assisting and aiding their families in increasing their buying power through cleaning up their credit and taking debt collectors to task, using a small claims court venue. They're doing a heck of a job. I just wanted to single them out and say that I'm proud of you for taking on this education than taking on the education of Hard Knocks in the streets. So just wanted to give a special shout out to that group. We're going to have a lesson today by myself. A little bit conflicted of what I'm going to talk about, but we're going to talk about some things related to debt collection and some things we may employ to, again, broaden our awareness of violations with respects to the consumer protection laws. I'm going to offer a few other or additional ways that we can advance our case against unscrupulous debt collectors. I believe that is all I had. Layla, Lori, and Rudy, did you have anything else?
I believe there was a couple of emails that were sent out from our researcher, and I'm going to have to back into it for a minute, and probably will need Lori's help to talk about this. But there was something she sent over about how bad debt behavior turns a winning case into a massive defeat. And Lori, if you will, if you could help me talk about that a little bit, Brother Truth, I think you're aware of it.
Yeah, I have that case. I plan on talking about that later on. Yep.
Okay.
Definitely going to go over that case. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was something that was of great interest to me. Okay, fine. The only other thing that I might say is that we have the power as the people, and I wanted to give a short example. We know that the baby boomers are the largest group of people that are out there, and everything that we have needed has been provided. If you think about we went from Pampers to diapers, from the mother making the food on the plate to Gerber baby food, to Stride-Rite shoes, and now to debt. If people would realize that everything has been provided for us along the way, even now in this crisis situation, the consumer protection laws as well as the education, like Brother Sharif is bringing us, gives us problems to our solutions that have been provided. I want people to just understand where they really are and the power that they have if they would just get educated.
Indeed. I like that information. All right, Layla and Lori, do you have anything else you want to go over before I get into my lesson, and then we're going to get into Thor trivia, and we're going to take some questions and hopefully provide some answers.
Let's do it.
Y'all want to do it.
Let's move forward. I love the Thor trivia. I think it's exciting. I think a lot of people are looking forward to that.
All right, great. I'm going to take a short break. Let me find this article, and then we'll be right back, and I'll get into my lesson of today. Greetings, greetings. We're back. Welcome to Thor Radio Network. I'm your host and founder, Brother Shreve. I've got a short lesson today before we get into Thor trivia. As you know, Thor, we always focus on education as well as having the right attitude and spirit. Because many times your attitude and spirit can change the course of your results. If you're doing things for the wrong reasons, or if you're retaliatory, or if you're angry, or things of that nature, I believe the Creator will not let you advance successfully. And we also talk about the fact that you can't abuse information or people. Specifically here, we talk about abuses by debt collectors. That's what we focus on. And within that, we also know that there's some people that will come out of our midst with a certain level of education about our subject matter, and they will go on to present that information or represent it or repackage it to you, attached with an outrageous compensatory amount. That is another form of abuse, or gurus that are taking you down a road that they know will not end in success, yet they continue to drive you down that road. That's another form of abuse by people amongst you. But then there's people that come into this information and they feel they've been oppressed by debt collectors for so long that they want somebody to get back at. They want somebody to take their frustration out on, or although they complain about being oppressed, they turn around and become oppressive themselves, which I never understood. It's always been a problem to me when you deal with certain crimes and they come up with the excuse that they were molested or abused as kids. And then they go on to abuse others as if what they experienced was not bad enough. So I want to discuss with you what my team was talking about. My research team and Lori was speaking about a case that a consumer had. His name is Brandon Scroggin, S-C-R-O-G-G-I-N. Brandon seems to be a pretty informed consumer on dealing with debt collectors and the consumer protection laws. Where he got that education from, I don't know. Might have been here, might have been elsewhere. Might have been a hybrid of multiple places and sources. At any rate, I'll read to you the article and read to you what happened to him as a Thor warning to you that don't be greedy. Don't get creative unless you're trying to merge together or piece together a violation that requires creativity. But what I always say is that you will find a lot of the people out here that are informed on this subject matter, they begin to dissect it too much as if it's a frog inside of a science class. They make it way more difficult, way more complicated, way more intricate than it really is. As in sports, you want to stick to the basics, the fundamentals. Creativity will come in time, but you just don't know if you misplace that creativity, or the courts may feel you are abusing the information and stretching the information, and you're acting unreasonably, okay? Unreasonably. That is a legal term, reasonably and unreasonably. Then, although you may have stated a claim upon which relief can be granted, they cannot grant it to you. if they felt you came with unclean hands or your intent wasn't good. Okay? In many cases, although we talk about it's difficult that a debt collector collect any debt from you, a third party one at least, for some of you, you have to understand that you did acquire the debt. Maybe you did or didn't, but because the consumer protection laws is about behavior and conduct, really doesn't matter. This is why I say you have to maintain the right mens rea, mindset, spirit, and posture, and make sure your character and behavior is always up to par. Okay? Brandon Scroggin was a consumer. He filed a very good case against a debt collection agency. It was a very solid case. The debt collector had offered him a $5,000 settlement. It was based on a medical bill that he had, just a single medical bill. And he filed suit. They made an offer to him for $5,000. And for some reason, he didn't take it. And I'll read the article. It's not that long. Just bear with me, probably about 2 minutes. And I'll tell you exactly what happened. Brandon Scroggin had an airtight FDCPA claim against a debt collection agency. It was such a solid case that the company offered him a $5,000 settlement to make it go away. But now Scroggin owes the agency more than $33,000 to pay their attorney fees. So how did he go from $5,000 to $33,000, large in the hole? Scroggin is a prolific poster on consumer-focused web forums, offering people advice on how to deal with debt collectors and creditors. His specialty is suing debt collectors for FDCPA violations, many of which he baited the firms into making, and he doesn't try to hide that fact. In evidence presented in his case, Scroggin wrote on a consumer message board, "If you want to solicit the FDCPA violation, send them the refusal to pay with a reason. They are more likely to write you back and show you how you are wrong and they are right. In other words, argue with you. Who cares what they say? It's an FDCPA violation, and it's strict liability." Scroggins was, of course, technically correct about the FDCPA being a strict liability statute, but Azalea's focus on the technical correctness combined with a tenuous understanding of legal process and propensity to boast about his accomplishments to anonymous Internet users led to an unfavorable judgment. The case is Brandon Scroggin versus Credit Bureau of Jonesboro. Seems relatively straightforward. After a medical bill owed by Scroggin went delinquent, the debt was sent to CBJ for collection. The plaintiff accused it collection agency of violating the FDCPA by contacting him after sending a written cease and desist letter and for third-party disclosure after a friend heard a voice message from the collection agency. The defendant offered to settle the case for $5,000, but that wasn't good enough for Scroggin. "I want to maximize the retaliation, do some damage, and hopefully goad and or force them to an actual trial." That's what Scroggin wrote online. He did force that trial, and he actually won. A jury found that CBJ had indeed violated the FDCPA twice, but the jury found that Scroggin was not eligible for any damages, awarding him zero. That didn't matter, though, because Scroggin's intent was to cash in on attorney fees as the prevailing party. How did anyone know that fact? He kept posting about it online over and over. Due to a novel approach from the CBJ's attorney, Rebecca Warsham of Mixon & Warsham, all of the defendant's online postings were admitted into evidence, including the ones that talked about award strategy. The case was the first FDCPA defense case by Warsham. Her firm had handled other matters for CBJ in the past, but had never entered into
the highly specialized world of debt collection defense, so she wanted to find a new approach to limit her client's liability. Before her pages of vitriolic internet postings and an opponent who gladly admitted they were, in fact, his, I actually reached out to more attorney generals for advice on how to best get this evidence admitted. She felt that there was a very good case to be made that Scroggins had filed the suit and continued through to trial in bad faith and for the purpose of harassment. Perhaps the most pivotal action Borsham took was moving for dismissal of the case and for order of civility based on comments Scroggins posted on certain internet websites in discovery upon learning about his posting habits. Although the motion was denied, the judge allowed the post to be entered into evidence, especially since Scroggins seemed so proud of them. Immediately after the jury handed down the verdict against CBJ, Washam filed for attorney fees and costs. The FDCPA does allow for attorney fees and costs if the defendant wins and can show the case was brought in bad faith. And the Supreme Court last year famously held that a successful defendant could be awarded costs even in the absence of a finding of bad faith. But awarding costs to a defendant that lost, that would be a first. Interestingly, the jury signaled that there might be a case here. In addition to deciding on the merits of the FDCPA violations and what damages the plaintiff was entitled to, the jury was asked if they felt Scroggins had brought the case, one, in bad faith for the purpose of harassment, one, in bad faith, and two, for the purpose of harassment. The jury found that he had brought the case in bad faith, but found that he had not brought it for the purpose of harassment. That's all District Judge Susan Weber Wright needed to award attorney's fees to CBJ, who was the debt collector, in the amount of $33,220. Scroggins appealed the decision to the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals. Rather than debate the merits of the award in the FDCPA, the Circuit Court panel was asked to examine if Judge Wright was acting in her discretion to award the attorney fees to CBJ. They affirmed her right to award the fees and costs without commenting on merit. So there you go. The greediness, the wrong intent, abusive, retaliatory, and having a big mouth boasting and bragging and chest pumping resulted in this consumer now having to pay $33,220 for the attorney fees to the debt collector, and the jury awarded him zero. So I think that lesson should speak for itself. There's a lot of groups out there that wants to be oppressive towards debt collectors. First of all, debt collection is a legitimate business, and not all debt collectors violate the consumer protection laws when trying to collect a legitimate debt from you. I think that's what people fail to understand, that it's on a case-by-case basis. Some of you have legitimate creditors, and debt collectors are legitimately collecting a debt. I don't want anybody to get in their mind that all debt collectors are not entitled to collect. They are entitled to collect any legitimate debt, but they do have to follow the FDCPA, FCRA, TCPA, and your local consumer state consumer protection laws in doing so. That makes for a very difficult task, but many times it can be done. If you are offered a reasonable settlement from a debt collector, you need to take that. He was offered $5,000 for a medical bill that he more than likely accrued, and he was blessed with the turnaround of putting $5,000 in his pocket and more than likely having that blemish off of his credit report deleted or otherwise removed. And he wanted to force trial to see if he can get more. And you have to understand that a jury has very broad powers. Even though there may be a violation, they can award you something or nothing. Okay? So,
Brother Therese?
Keep your spirit right. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I think one of the things to emphasize here is that this is the reversal of behavior and conduct. And what you teach is that, like you just said, they have a right to collect the debt if you have that debt, but we are to monitor their behavior and conduct. And so what we see in this instance is that his behavior and his conduct was monitored. So it was like the other side of the seesaw.
That's right. I mean, listen, behavior and conduct works both ways.
Hey, you guys, okay. I've got a comment on this just real fast because this article just, I don't know, it made me first laugh because I thought, man, what a fool. And then it kind of, you know, the more I got thinking about it, the more it angered me, you know, it angered me because it, you know, it really hurts people who are out there honestly trying to just do what's right and do what's wrong, irregardless of what anyone else is doing, you know. But this guy, he did over 6,500 posts. These are just the ones that were admitted into the case. But this cat did over 6,500 posts on just doing that. Like you're saying, the bad spirit, just from the bad mindset coming from a bad place, and of course, you know, karma definitely kicked him in the ass. But I have to read just to for everyone to be clear on his mindset, right? One of his posts was, "I don't need the money. I just need your money, debt collector. Your money to buy the crap that I don't want to buy with my money. I'm thinking about inviting CIC, which is a credit info center, members to Jonesboro, Arkansas for a victory celebration. We can hit the finest steakhouse out here, which is Outback, of course. Then we can take a short trip over to Memphis and hit the dog track. And we can put a C-note on every dog that makes a big dump 1 minute before every race. Hit the local strip club and help some girls work their way through college. And then on the way back home to top it off, we'll stop off and get some triple waffles at the Waffle House and sit around smoking cigars and talk about how smart we are while tipping Flo a fat George Washington every time she plops down another triple waffle. Now, that's just having class, but having it with style." I mean, what is going on? Right? What is going on with that?
It's ignorant. You know, this is indicative of people that come into powerful knowledge and want to abuse it. This is what our country is going through on many levels. This gentleman is probably that abusive in his home. He's probably have a lot of excuses for being abusive. He feels he was maybe abused by debt collectors for so long. No, you wasn't abused by debt collectors per se. You were uneducated. Every time you entered into a consumer transaction, you received a copy of that contract, but you didn't read it like many of us didn't at some point in time. And now you want to turn around and was $5,000 not good enough? What do you think a jury is going to give you from a debt collector sending you a letter? I mean, let's be realistic. What is enough? Was $5,000 enough? Well, I think so. There are some overwhelming, egregious, and abusive and harassing type cases that are out there that would subject a debt collector to, you know, significant liability under the FDCPA or state consumer protection laws, and those are out there. And those debt collectors are usually ruled against substantially, monetarily. But a letter, a couple of letters, $5,000 is reasonable. Okay? It's reasonable. And let me tell you, let me make everybody understand this. Sometimes debt collectors will make you an offer of settlement that just makes good money sense. And let me explain what I mean by that. Money sense means you may be wrong. Your understanding of the consumer protection laws may be totally wrong, and you may
get an offer of settlement. Why? Because they don't want to spend $30,000 proving you wrong. Okay? It's a money game with them. It's dollars and cents. You can be wrong, but you can really believe you're right. And they would have to pay $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. In this sense, you see $33,000 in attorney fees to prove that you're wrong. So they spent $33,000 for him receiving a couple of letters. That was a violation, and a violation is a violation, but why did he bring it? It wasn't abusing him. They didn't call him and curse him. It wasn't an FCRA violation that subject them to punitive damages on a monthly basis where he was damaged. They sent them a couple of letters after he sent a notice of dispute with a cease and desist. That's it. $5,000, you take that, you move on. You invest in your education. You do whatever you need to do. But he baited them. You notice the wording that was used was baited. So he's telling people how to bait somebody into a lawsuit and into damages. And sure, the debt collectors oblige them by engaging. That's what they're going to do. They're in the business of collecting. And sure, they make those mistakes a lot of times. But the Creator is always, the Most High is always going to give you the results you deserve. You have to bring things in the right spirit. When you have the right education, you won't want to abuse it. You really just want to get your relief and move on. Okay? So, yeah, it's you know, what Lori just read was just ghetto behavior, ignorance, okay? And people like that do need to be caged in their character and behavior, and they need to be prohibited from doing those type of things. You do things in honor, right? Because when you read the will and intent of the consumer protection laws, it was to make sure that you're not abused by debt collectors, okay? It was to make sure you're not confused by debt collectors. It was to make sure that you're receiving the proper information. You, as a least sophisticated, unsophisticated consumer, was afforded an opportunity to know what you're supposed to pay and that amount be accurate, or the debt be accurate and validated and or verified appropriately. It's not for you to go and, you know, make a gang out of going against debt collectors. Okay? So you have to learn the art of negotiating. You have to have be of sound mind and spirit in doing so. And if you're able to turn, okay, listen to this. If you're able to turn a debt into an asset, thank the Creator, take your settlement, and move on. So, any other comments on that?
My other thing would be that.
Go ahead.
No, but he just made bad case law for anybody else who would be trying to uphold what they believe would be their rights in a process
exactly.
like this. Yeah, this would be something that would be put out there. Well, you see, they did it over here, and so how do we know that they're not doing it over there? Which, again, goes back to anybody getting ready to engage in filing a suit. Dot your I's and cross your T's and make sure you know what you're doing before you get out there, because at least you know you're going to have to face this obstacle.
Boom, that's a great point.
Right.
I just wanted to add, if you don't mind, the fact that if I heard the article, in the article, that was the first case that the attorney had dealt with in the consumer protection arena, and she called out to Attorney General. So I hear from that side that now we're educating more attorneys that did not know about the consumer protection laws to be sharper when they are dealing in this arena.
Well, that's right. I mean, she used all the resources available to her within her association, as the bar is an association, okay? They are members of that association, and they are able to reach out amongst each other and do what it is that before Thor or some other groups out there you wasn't able to do, which is to reach out to other consumers. So there is a great of amount of attention on this arena, because mostly everything out there as it relates to debt when it comes to foreclosures and credit cards
crawl under the purview of the consumer protection laws. We all know that. Pretty much the mask has been lifted on creditors playing, debt collectors playing creditors, and that whole masquerade game is pretty much up. And this is where everything is at, and you're going to see a lot more people, and especially since Thor came about, you're going to see a lot of copycats and a lot of people coming up and now being aware of that information, using the information, and you're also going to have people like some of which recently derived here, some people that's going to take the information, try to package it, and sell it to you for $5,000, and they don't know a thing about it, and you know, you're going to have some people that are going to be overly creative and try to bait someone, which is legally called a form of entrapment, okay, into committing violations. Okay, that doesn't excuse the behavior, but you know, entrapment is something that's considered when you're going before the jury. Okay? You also don't want to be so quick to engage in litigation, which is one of the things you won't hear Brother Sharif say here at Thor, is that I don't really push people into, you know, saying, yeah, sue them, sue them, sue them. You know, I know there's other, you know, groups and that are out there that are quick to tell you to sue someone, but I really think you have to have the requisite knowledge and experience and education to take on somebody, especially someone who lives and breathes their occupation. So I'm not quick to say sue. I'm quick to say, listen, send out an effective communication. And when you send out effective communications, trust me on this. If you send out a good enough notice, you will settle 7 out of 10 of your cases, maybe 8, without going to court. All right? I'm just telling you. If you spell out and you send in an effective notice of dispute, some of you are in possession of it because that's some of those letters that I designed that people are out there selling for $5,000. They're very effective. They're very pointed. They're very poised. They're not arrogant. They're not cocky, but they definitely let the debt collector know you are well informed and you are well educated. You're able to point out certain things. You're able to say certain things, and you're able to provide the information needed that will encourage them to call you or contact you to settle. And this is why I focus on not document selling around here or document assassination, but education, because when you obtain the proper education, you'll be able to look at your letters and be able to formulate what violations there are, and you'll be able to articulate it in writing. And you won't be surprised when you get a phone call saying, let's just settle this. We don't need to spend a whole bunch of money. And this is where I have to make everyone understand that the last thing you really want to do is have to file a lawsuit. Because some of you, first of all, is not ready. Okay? And litigation is very tricky. So when you have people run out here to feel like they got enough information and they can sell you a package and they can do those type of things, they've never litigated in their life, they've never been to trial, or they use attorneys all the time, those people are not experienced in litigation. And litigation is very tricky. There's a great deal of rules to that game that you must know. And then not only must you know them, you must know how to use them and when to use them. And when tricks are being played on you, you must know how to counter and defend against those tricks. And many people don't know how to do that. So your last resort is always to file a lawsuit, if at all possible. And if you write effective notices, you will avoid litigation, because litigation can be a bad thing for you. Some of you on this call are not ready for it. Litigation can be a horrible thing for you. Some of you are becoming aware of that because you're too quick to take information and think that you're ready to go demonstrate that knowledge in an atmosphere that can be very tricky, to say the least. So why go to that court have to follow those rules, walk that straight line all the way up to and leading to a trial, you miss one of those requirements as set forth in the federal rules or your local rules, you're done. Okay? You're done. So most of you, in terms of driving, you will be considered a little bit impaired if you don't have the requisite knowledge and information inside of you, okay, and an understanding of the rules of procedure. You would be considered driving or litigating while impaired. And if you get called on one of those misprocedures, your case is done. And you may be subject to a ruling with prejudice, or you may run into estoppel by res judicata. So settle with your debt collectors. They're more than willing to do so if they really know that there's a violation there. They will be willing to settle with you many times. Now, you may get some attorneys, some greedy attorneys, because, of course, you know, they'll get paid a minimum upon belief when they settle with you. But some of the debt collectors will tell them, listen, I don't want to spend 30 grand on you to prove that they're right or wrong. Let's go ahead and settle it and let's move on. Or you might find some attorneys that be like, no, I want to take you in court because, first of all, I think you're wrong. I'm looking at your letter that you sent, and you're kind of abusive. You're kind of nasty. You may be right, but seems like your spirit is not right, and maybe I can lead you into a scrogging order or result because you're just being a butthole. Okay? When you get the information you get here at Thor, there is a confidence to it, but it's not an arrogance to your diction and your writing and your communicating, or if you're verbally speaking to your debt collectors. There's no abuse of them. Okay, I might say things sarcastically. I may appear to be sarcastic, but I'm nowhere belligerent or abusive. I don't have to be. You don't have to be either. Use the information in its purity. Use it for the right reasons. Discern what you're dealing with. And make every effort and be able to demonstrate through documentation that you performed all your conditions precedent through a tort letter or, look, you want to demonstrate to the court, I tried to settle this matter with this debt collector. As a matter of fact, I went over and beyond that which was required to try to settle to avoid us coming into this court. That weighs heavy on the judge and it weighs heavy on the jury. Okay? If you know you have a violation, then you know you have a violation. You have a year or two or up to 5 years, depending on whether it's FDCPA or FCRA, to bring those violations. So why not take an extra minute or hour to draft one more letter to that debt collector in the spirit of settlement and say, you're leaving me no choice but to file suit against you, which is going to cost both you and I a lot of time and money. If you disagree that the violation is a violation, explain to me why. Or I'm going to be forced to have to file suit. Something to that nature. Those words will resonate throughout your case. Okay? Again, here at Thor, we try to deal with your character and behavior. Okay, because the law allows you to, the consumer protection laws allows you as an individual to judge the character and behavior of a debt collector, guided by the principles named in the consumer protection laws. You have to also judge your character at the same time. Keep that in mind. You will settle with them if you send effective communication. But first, you have to get an understanding within yourself of what violations are
and what they are not. All right? I want to get into Thor trivia, but before, I just want to go over a little bit of information. And I want to reserve the balance of my time for the Thor trivia because I believe that's going to take us into a few different areas that can be considered the lesson of today. There are several cases out there that speaks about how the courts appear to give rise to the consumer protection law and the teeth that it has. Okay, of course they could never deny that. They often have. But since this is where a good bit of the consumers are going and receiving, as you can see, little Pookie there, receive some relief, then that's where everybody is going to go. And that's where everybody should have been. That's where I've been. And I've been screaming loud to get everybody else to get off that mortgagee-mortgature type nonsense. And every week we come on here, we're able to demonstrate where the court is supporting what I have been and Thor has been saying for the longest. Okay? Now, there wasn't that many rulings when Thor started. Okay? So, there's been some significant movement in this area. You know, and my favorite ruling I discussed was the Zervos, Zervos case versus Ocwen. For those of you that have Ocwen, when I tell you Ocwen is on a F-16 jet pointed downwards in terms of its abuse, that's an understatement. Ocwen, by far, in my opinion, has been the most abusive of all servicers, the most egregious. I mean, they're just outright mobsters, okay? Ocwen and, in my opinion, Experian are one and the same in terms of behavior in the consumer protection arena. But, you know, when you hear the courts come out and make a ruling such as they did in Zervos versus Ocwen, then that brings cheers to me. And, of course, my avatar, Thor, jumps up and down when what I've said is written exactly as the way I've been stating it's been all along. And for those of you that don't know, in the Ocwen case, Zervos versus Ocwen, the court made a specific ruling that Ocwen was a debt collector. And not only that, but there's no other court out there that really went as far as the court did in the Zervos case to say that Ocwen purchased the debt. Now, I examined many cases, and no court has ever came out right and said a mortgage servicer purchased the debt. A lot of people will breeze over that. Hopefully nobody here at Thor will ever breeze over something that significant. I've always said your servicer is your debt collector, and the boogeyman that they say that they work for don't exist. You have to understand that our country, and specifically in commerce, we love to create boogeymans. Okay, the unknown, the Wizard of Oz, the somebody that we don't ever hear from or we never see, we never get a document from. Somebody's always hiding behind somebody to create that invisible character that when we screw up or we're revealed or we're attacked, we can always point our finger to But it's all a hallucination. It's a holocaust, the way Laurie says. There is no lender behind these servicers many times. There is no creditor behind these servicers many times. It is just them. As I told you, Warren Buffett bought, I believe, $4 million or $4 billion, $4 billion in defaulted debt out of bankruptcy court of one of the major lenders or servicers or whatever have you. Do you think he's going to come out and send you a debt collection letter that says Warren Buffett debt collection? Or do you think he's going to continue putting on the costumes that these servicers wear and saying that they're your mortgage servicer or servicer? Or allege that they are a mortgage servicer and don't specify whether they're a bank servicer or non-bank servicer, which would make a difference. Okay? Right quick, address North Shore in the chat. Says thank you for what you're doing. I'm sorry. Says thank you, and we appreciate you as well. And Mr. Mara Allen gave thanks for doing a Thortabulous job. And Mr. Plante thanks us for the Thorality and spirituality and reality that we offer. So we appreciate that. All right, so I want to talk about basically what we need to look for when we're dealing with these debts, and we're going to talk about one area that we can look into before we get into the Dunning notices. And we were going to have a webinar on this, but I believe it was during the week, and we may return to that idea shortly. But we're going to talk about one of the Dunning letters that I don't think many of you pay attention to, one of the most significant ones, all right? And that is your bank statements. Your bank statements may be considered a Dunning notice in that it makes certain demands of payments from you. Many times those demands and those statements come from alleged servicers. And those statements are usually loaded with more information than a Dunning letter. All right? So although we're going to get into Dunning letters, I wanted to point out how you can use that Dunning letter along with any statement that is sent, because a statement is a demand for payment. So on a statement, for those of you that may have one in front of you, you can look at some of the information listed is a loan number and a statement date, total payment due. Okay, so it's no secret that a statement makes a demand for you to make payment. All right, so and there's a payment due date. There's a late charge usually named. There's an original principal balance. There's an unpaid principal balance. There is an interest rate, and we're going to talk about interest rate for a minute. After this, there's an escrow balance. There's a corporate advance balance for some of you. I don't know what the heck that is. All right? But where can we find a greater gist of violations would be in a bank statement as opposed to a Dunning letter. It's a lot of information in there. That information, pursuant to the FDCPA and the FCRA, has to be accurate. All right? Now, I know there's conflicting information out there regarding how one handles mortgage statements and communicating with so-called lenders within a mortgage or deed of trust or security deed. And some or out there is of the opinion that you send them a qualified written request and, you know, ask for certain things within 12 U.S.C. 2605, which is the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act. Okay? I'm not going to say that way is right or wrong. Okay, what I say is that I'm not going to go to Russia and speak Chinese and English, meaning that if I'm dealing with a debt collector, I'm going to speak with them within the required language set forth in the consumer protection laws. If I'm saying they're a debt collector, then how can I communicate with them within 12 U.S.C. 2605, which is a qualified written request? How do you do both? If you're saying they're a debt collector and they acquired the debt while it was in default, and they're subject to the FDCPA, and you may, if you're smart, specifically or generally deny the existence of a note or a mortgage or the debt in part or in full, then why would you be communicating with them as if they are party to some mortgage or deed? I don't understand how you would do that. Okay? You first have to determine what, as Thor says, identify. Identify who they are. You can't speak to anyone unless you know who they are. You can't answer the door if somebody knocks unless you know who they are. So how can you send a notice of dispute, then turn around and send a QWR? That just doesn't make sense to me. Okay? That's just my opinion. Okay? So unless I know someone is party to a contract, then that contract is private between me and the party I may have executed that contract with. You just can't send me a copy of it and expect me to believe that you somehow have something to do with it when a copy of that contract is available on an internet site for anybody with a computer and an internet connection. You sending me a copy of that does not mean you're a party to it or that you are entitled to any payment or that you are entitled to even discuss that contract with me. Right? So then if that's the case and you invite them into a conversation regarding the contract by sending them a QWR, a qualified written request, then what message are you sending? Are you disputing the debt under the FDCPA, or are you saying they're a creditor by sending them a qualified written request? A qualified written request are for creditors. They're not for debt collectors. How would you send them both? So I pose that question to some of the gurus that are out there or some of the people that may be knowledgeable on this topic, and I just need an explanation because I get that question a lot of times, that certain people tell you to send both. How would you send both? And which are they to respond to? Because if I'm trying to convince you that I'm a creditor by sending you a bank statement and sending you language that says that I'm your servicer, and you send me a notice of dispute and a qualified written request, if I want to keep the secret going, which one am I going to answer? I'm going to answer the QWR. Right? That's what I would do. And ignore the notice of dispute. Because if you're sending me a creditor-related document that's supported by credit or related statute or code or law, then how the hell can you send me a notice of dispute too under a different set of laws? Okay? We have to be very poised in our communication. We have to pick a path. If you have a creditor in front of you, then you shouldn't be sending them a damn notice of dispute. A creditor is allowed to do certain things to you. A creditor is allowed to make certain mistakes. The QWR addresses those mistakes. A QWR addresses, in a way, what a notice of dispute does. I dispute a certain charge under 12 U.S.C. 2605, the Real Estate Settlement Procedures Act, and you send a QWR saying, hey, I got a problem with my escrow, or I got a problem with this payment, or that payment wasn't applied, and you're requesting information under 12 U.S.C. 2605E. Okay? So by law, they are to research that information every certain amount of time. I believe it's 5 days to respond to you and 20 days to provide that information, or 30 days. All right, and during that time, they are not allowed to report any negative or derogatory credit information to the credit bureaus. Okay, so in essence, the QWR gives you a dispute element. And for them not to provide any further information until they provide the information regarding the dispute. So how would you send both? I'm just trying to clean up, provide a different look at some of the information that's out there that's often crossed between different mindsets and different viewpoints. I'm not saying either is wrong. I'm just telling you that Thor would not recommend you doing both. And, well, I'll tell you why. Let's just look at the Zervos case, where the court made a ruling that, well, your mortgager bought the debt. Well, then how the hell are you sending them a QWR? If the court determined purchase the debt and they're a debt collector, why would you send them a creditor-related qualified written request? Makes no sense. Okay? You can jam yourself up by sending two letters, just throwing something at the wall and seeing which one sticks. All right? Thor gladiators know what to send, when to send it. We don't throw things against the wall. We're able to discern and scan for violations. We're able to identify first, and we're able to not engage in subject matter talk, because a QWR is subject matter rhetoric, is it not? Tell me about the escrow. Give me this. I challenge that payment. I challenge that payment. Well, isn't it? Notice of dispute, especially when a mortgage servicer is sending you a notice and saying, this is an attempt to collect the debt, doesn't the notice of dispute safely advances your concerns and your dispute? Hey, I dispute that. All right? And they have a requirement to validate and or verify the debt. And you're able to ask some questions within a notice of dispute, some particular, specific questions. Okay? So, in my opinion, the notice of dispute is going to accomplish more and still keep you in a position as if you were if you got sued. What is the first thing you do when you're sued? Do you go in and do you file an answer? No, you would file a what? A motion to dismiss, correct? You want to test the veracity of the complaint, so you're going to file a motion to dismiss for whatever you deem is appropriate. Okay, you're not going to engage in subject matter. You're not going to start talking about, well, I missed my payment, I lost my job, you know, I banged my toe, or the economy was bad, I moved jobs. You're not going to start admitting the debt. You're not going to start admitting that you executed anything. You're not going to start talking to strangers about proprietary information. It's not the time. So if it's not the time for you to engage in that, if you were being sued, why the hell would you send, heck, would you send a QWR and start engaging in that subject matter? When the party you're talking to may not have an interest in the matter and may not be able to answer your questions, and what's the result of RESPA violations, a couple of $1,000s? Okay, so my opinion to all of you out there is to pick a particular mode of communication that's consistent with your situation. Dealing with a debt collector, you do debt collector talk. You don't admit or deny anything until you have evidence that supports that admission or denial. How can you admit something that you don't know? They send you a copy of the note. How can you admit that that is your note? It's been out of your possession for 10 years. 12 years, it's a copy of something printed off a website, and you can see where it was, and you're going to admit that that's something that you sign or you execute it? Does a QWR not admit executed that contract? And you just have certain concerns or disputes about how the contract was serviced? So then how can you turn around later and do a notice of dispute and say, look, I disputed. Well, you didn't dispute it. You sent us a damn QWR, buddy. And you told us to look into the escrow. How can you have an escrow if you never executed the debt or the note and the mortgage? That's what I would say. So whoever's telling you to do both, you should reconsider doing both. Okay? Now, let's talk about a couple of things that's come. Well, let's go back to the bank statement, and then I'll go to that. So we're looking at a bank statement that has fees and charges, has escrow payments, total payment due, interest and principal, and a host of other charges on there. Now, if a mortgage servicer is sending you this bank statement, allegedly, and all of this information is on there, all of that information has to be accurate. And when they send you this, when they send you this statement, many times there's no language on it as it relates to the consumer protection laws. This is an attempt to collect the debt because generally a bank statement is considered correspondence between a creditor and debtor. Many times they won't put that language on there, but if it's coming from an alleged mortgage servicer or a debt buyer who's sending you this statement under the umbrella of being your mortgage servicer, can that be considered a Dunning letter? Absolutely yes, in my opinion. Okay? Because they want to sometimes confuse you into thinking that they are a mortgage servicer, a lot of times they're not going to send you a Dunning letter unless you are in some type of default. So they're going to send you what? They're going to send you a statement. Can you treat a statement as a Dunning letter? Well, a Dunning letter is a demand for payment. Is a statement not? Of course it is. So why are we not treating statements as a Dunning letter? As soon as they send you a statement, you send them a notice of dispute. I've said to all of you that it's very difficult for any of these mortgage, any of these debt buyers to provide you with an exact amount of what you owed, what your interest rate was, if you had an adjustable rate mortgage, your escrow amount, your taxes, charges, fees, in this case, a corporate advance balance. A statement has at least 8 categories of calculations. Are all of those calculations accurate, true, and correct? I don't know. But I do know that under the consumer protection law, it has to be. We all know that interest has to be calculated utilizing a specific math equation, mathematical equation. Cannot be done with a calculator, and most debt collectors and debt buyers use calculators. All right? We all know that. We all know that if you look at your bank statements, national banking associations usually invest in very sophisticated programs that makes your bank statement nice and pretty, colorful, 4 or 5 colors, specified areas, symbols, all right? And some of these banks are still sending you statements, and they're really debt collectors and not lenders or creditors. But there also are mortgage servicers, debt buyers, who try to copy the fanciness of those statements, but a lot of times they're a lesser version or very unsophisticated program that attempts to accomplish the same thing but really doesn't. No matter how fancy it looks, it must add up, it must be right and exact. And a violation in that bank statement may be a violation of the consumer protection laws, and I'm just telling you that there's a lot more of buffet in your bank statement. Let's talk about interest for a minute, which is another area that I believe that we don't look into. That's whether a debt collector can charge you interest after the fact. And I've looked into this off and on for some time, but haven't really brought it to bear, because many times when debt collectors sue you on credit card contracts, they're suing you a lot of times for interest accrued from the time you went in default. Well, can they do that? Well, I don't know. Let's see if they can. Well, let's see what they can do. All right, so you charge, so you stop making payments on your credit card, or let's say your alleged mortgage, and the bank or the lender allegedly charges it off. Now, most of the times when they charge it off, they're you know, if they know it's uncollectible, they're not going to keep charging interest to it. Like if you go a few months past, depending on a mortgage, they'll just keep going a lot of the time. Right, and you don't know that it was ever charged off or sold except when you get that assignment, correct? And that assignment can be akin to a charge-off because that assignment was drafted while the alleged debt was in default. So although they make you think that that assignment kept the creditor-debtor relationship intact, we all know that it did not necessarily. All right? Okay, so let's say that in a credit card situation, they will charge off the debt. All right? And they'll charge off an amount. Let's say you owed $1,000. Okay, they'll charge off $1,000. All right? So in essence, they stop charging interest because they've charged it off. Why are you going to keep charging interest? First of all, what we have to understand is that if interest is charged, accrued monthly or daily, pursuant to the Truth in Lending Act, they got to send you a monthly statement. They'll let you know that, listen, you're accruing interest daily or monthly. All right? So that's one aspect of it, that the Truth in Lending requires them to send you a monthly statement, because you have to know what you're being charged, correct? But many times what these creditors would do is that they'll just charge it off, and they'll stop charging interest because they don't know what they're going to do with it after that point anyway. They're going to sell it to a debt collector. I don't know. Who knows? All right, so when does the contract end? When you stop paying? When does interest stop being charged? When you stop paying, or by operation of the charge-off by the creditor? Charge it off. Let's say for $1,000, sell it to the debt collector. And the debt collector will buy them for whatever, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 cents on the dollar. All right, and let's say they charge it off today, August the 26th. Okay? Let's say they sold it to a debt collector September the 26th. Okay? What would the charge-off date be? Well, the charge-off is when the bank or the creditor charged it off, which would be August the 26th. The debt collector bought the debt September the 26th. What these debt collectors will do is they'll take the interest rate and tack it on from the date of the charge-off, which would be August the 26th. okay? But they actually bought the debt in September. So they'll be charging you from the time really you will find. They will charge you almost from the time you just stop paying your credit card bill. They'll even go further than that. All right? So is this a violation? It can be. First of all, you have to look within your contract and see what interest is allowed to be charged, if any. And you have to look in your contract and see if after default or charge-off they are allowed to charge you interest. So, again, always the first law is the contract. Contract is law. As long as it's not in violation of any state or federal law, that contract is the first law. Okay? And keep in mind that a lot of times these debt collectors don't have these contracts or agreements. Okay? So we look in the contract, and then you want to look in your state and federal law. A lot of times state laws don't allow for them to charge interest. Some states will allow up to 18% prejudgment interest if they sue you. Okay? Some states don't allow them to collect interest at all if they do not sue you. So where do you look for the answer is going to be first in the contract and then in your state law. Okay, but where the violation would be is many of these Dunning letters that you get don't state the amount of interest. Sometimes they don't separate principal and interest. That, in my opinion, is definitely a violation. And then it depends on when they're charging you interest. From what point? If they acquired the debt in September, they can't be charging you interest in August, right? Or if they acquired the debt in many cases, like a year after, can they charge you interest on the year before when they didn't even have the debt? Now, they can say, well, the contract called for it, but you didn't have the debt. Okay? So this is another area that Thor is going to look into and try as much as we can to get an exact answer, but if you can calculate that the interest they're charging you was prior to them coming into possession of the debt, and they have to be able to support that with a sales agreement or whatever they have to be able to charge you interest, no different than a mortgage. Okay? If that servicer, they want to call themselves, or debt collector acquired that alleged debt while it was in default, memorialized by an assignment, then when did you take possession of that alleged debt, and when are you allowed to charge interest? From which point? You have to look in your deed, you have to look in your mortgage under the default section and see what they're allowed to do, what expenses, what costs are allowed. A lot of times these debt collectors will tack on fees and charges that has nothing to do with you, that it's not even allowed in the mortgage or the deed. All you have to do is find one. And I submit to you, you'll be able to find several violations in a bank statement, but as well in a Dunning letter. Okay? So you have to look to your state, look to your contract first, look to your state laws to see what it allows to charge. And let me tell you something. These debt collectors are not looking in those areas. Do you understand? They're not looking. They buy them in bulk. It's a machine. Information goes in, information goes out. They're not going to dissect the information like you would. It would just not be costly. So an educated consumer that's paying attention is very deadly to a debt collector. Those pennies better add up. So that's one area you can look in. Has to be spelled out in the agreement. Has to be spelled out in your mortgage. And understand that cost is listed in most deeds and most mortgages, cost, not expenses. If you're in New York, they don't have expenses listed. They have costs. Some California deeds have costs and expenses. You have to read your contract. Everything always goes back to you reading the contract, whether you executed it or not. You have to read it. Okay, some states don't allow garnishment. Some do. Some states allow them to provide an affidavit as opposed to having the original agreement or contract. Some do. So this is why I say it takes education. Everybody has to really make a concerted effort to learn these things because, again, you're a consumer more than you're anything else. So you have to know these things because these things may be able to increase or stabilize your economic capacities. All right? We're going to look more into that, talk more about that, this interest rate charging that they're doing. They have to substantiate every single charge and amount that they claim. And it's quite difficult. All right? We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back and do Thor trivia. That's all I had on that particular topic is interest. You need to look at that. You need to pay attention to that. All right? Especially with credit cards because, you know, they charge variable rate, interest rates. Okay? And you know, variable rates are stated in a formula linked to the prime rate, and it's based on credit. Okay? So a lot of different ways there you can possibly find some violations that these debt buyers, bulk debt buyers and collectors are not looking at. Again, they don't know what you owe unless they can support that with some facts, not just saying it. Okay? What is out there is a copy of that agreement if you're dealing with a mortgage. It's recorded somewhere. We don't know what's recorded, whether it's original or was a copy of the original. We don't know that, do we? I don't know if people are really educating you in that manner. What do we know what was filed or recorded? Because that's just notice, isn't it? How do we argue something that's just notice? An assignment is notice. A recorded deed is just notice. A recorded mortgage is just notice. A lien is perceived. Just because someone files a document and says that it's a lien doesn't mean that it's a lien. Just because someone records a notice doesn't mean that the notice in itself or the content thereof is accurate or legal. We should know that by now that with all these cases being filed that everything that's written is not legal or lawful or accurate. And unfortunately, those three elements may be violation of the consumer protection laws. Isn't that right? Because if they filed those documents, let's take for instance the assignment or any other notice, substitution of trustee, notice of default, notice of trustee sale, if they record those documents and they are erroneous or defective or not accurate or not done by parties authorized to do so, would that not be a violation of 1692, let's say J, which is furnishing certain deceptive forms? Let me read it for you. It's unlawful to design, compile, and furnish any form knowing that such form would be used to create the false belief. You have to understand belief is very broad. Some of you believe that those documents filed are somehow golden, and they mean what they mean. You know, the courts usually use language like this, and I'm going to tell you how I decided to educate on this topic. The courts uses words when they talk about consumers, least sophisticated, unsophisticated, okay? These are the words they use for you, gullible, trusting, and naive. These are all words that I found inside of court opinions in favor of consumers. They actually use the words gullible, trusting, and naive. Least sophisticated and unsophisticated. But those words alone, and you see terminology in 1692J stating that to furnish any form, knowing that such form would be used to create the false belief in a consumer that a consumer, that a person other than the creditor of such consumer is participating in the collection of or in an attempt to collect the debt such consumer allegedly owes such creditor. Now, I ask you the simple question, trying to engage you in a little Thor war. 1692J says that if they create a form, design it or compile it, that have created the belief in you that a person other than the creditor, and they're not creditors, are they, is attempting to collect the debt allegedly owed to the creditor, the boogeyman that many times is not there, when in fact such person is not so participating. So if the boogeyman doesn't exist, is your lender, alleged lender, participating in that action? Well, let's think about the Zervos case. They came in there with the normal, we're the servicer, Your Honor. We're their mortgage servicers. Yeah, we're debt collectors, but we're their mortgage servicers. And the court said, no, not only are you not a bank servicer, but you bought the debt. You are subject to the FDCPA. Just pulled all their clothes off. Okay, so if what the court said is true in that particular case, and they are, and we look at what I just said in 1692J, and that was a mortgage case. So if the court said that you bought the debt, then are you not possibly liable under 1692J for filing a notice of trustee sale, substitution of trustee, assignment? Aren't all those forms deceptive then? Was it filed by the creditor? So, the furnishing of certain deceptive forms is a violation that I think many of you have, which is why I say you need to read the FDCPA in its entirety. And those of you that haven't, really, you should take the time to do so, and you'll get a better understanding out of these lessons and the subject matter being discussed here at Thor. All right? So, that's all I have in terms of lesson. It's 1 o'clock. We're going to get into Thor trivia. And we're going to come back. I have a couple of letters here. And then we're going to see, let me see if any of my panel have anything they want to say based on what I've just said.
I think I'd like to interject a thought at this point. Everybody who just finished hearing what you heard, don't forget that the webinar is coming up this weekend. There will also be a law class that's coming up. Debtshow@yahoo.com. Get on that email list. Obviously take copious notes, but really think about what was just said, because just about every case has documents filed into the Recorder of Deeds office that, as Brother Sharif just said, may or may not be what they're supposed to be. So I just wanted to put that thought in the air.
Indeed. Lori or Layla, any comments?
I've got just a couple real quick, and one that goes off of what Rudy just pointed out. I'm going to use myself as an example real fast. I, for instance, had always perceived or believed that I was dealing with a creditor at one point. Of course, I wasn't educated like I am now. However, some of the belief was based on what was recorded in the recorder's office. And like I've often pointed out to everyone, it's just as important whenever you're reading the statutes and your contracts, et cetera. It's almost more important to
to see or realize what's not being written as equal to what is being written. And the same with the deeds office, the county recorder's office. I was only looking at what was in the county recorder's office. I had not even, in the beginning, my conscience had not even thought about, because I was just under the perception that they were, you know, they were doing the right thing. They're the ones who knew what they were doing. They, you know, I don't know, they were the authority or whatever that whole deal is that caused you to go to that perception. But I was only looking at what was there. I had not even considered what was not there. And that was, I mean, it was just such a revelation whenever that finally, you know, clicked around in my whole discovery and the whole journey that this is all, has been for me. But whenever I realized that and then I started uncovering everything, I was like, ha-ha, you know. That was nothing but a dang hologram up there. It was just an illusion of what I was to believe and to trust in and to base everything on. And the facts were 180% the other direction. So anyway, I wanted to go, Rudy made me think of that whenever she was talking about that. And then the other thing, whenever you were going over the statements and stuff, I wanted to, it made me think of 1692C on the communication. Do y'all hear an echo?
Yeah, I got it.
Anyway, okay, on the communication in connection with debt collection, it made me think about that whenever you were going over the statements. And, you know, in the very beginning of 1692C, CA is the communication with consumers generally, and without prior consent of the consumer given directly to the debt collector and express, you know, consent given to them, they're not allowed to be contacting you. And whenever you flip your mortgage statements over and stuff, you'll notice all the little bitty tiny, tiny little font, you know, 1,000 words on the back of your mortgage statement. And whenever I first started really reading and understanding what my mortgage statements were really trying to communicate to me, but of course it was so deceptive, the appearance of what it was saying was one thing and really what they're saying is another. But when you flip them over and you see all that little bitty tiny stuff on the back, number one, those are red flags of really the violations that they're committing. But they're letting you know that. It's just a matter of how you're going to read that and how you're going to perceive it. And I'll just use one for an example. I'm going to use my mortgage statement for the reference. And most of them will have like a little coupon at the bottom of them, and so that you can send your payment off to them. Well, on the back of it, of your coupons, it'll have like has a question, you know, has your mailing address or your phone number changed? Because they're just needing to know. They're just needing to know how to contact you. Can you update a brother? Well, on that, it says, you know, please update us if so. But it also follows up, when you give us your mobile phone number, we have permission to contact you at the number about your account. Your consent allows us to text message you, artificial or pre-recorded voice messages, and automatic dialing technology for informational and or account service calls, but not for telemarketing or sales calls. It may include contact from companies working on our behalf to service your account. Message data and data rates may apply. You may contact us at any time to change these preferences. And that paragraph right there, it pointed out, I don't know, I could rip it off on the FDCPA. I mean, it just goes down the list, but it also flags TCPA and otherwise, and of course your state violations as well. But just that one paragraph, if you take it section by section by section, it shows you exactly what's up and how they are going to violate, but yet we're giving you a heads up. I just wanted to, you know, create that awareness out there for people.
Yes, good job. You're exactly right. So be careful what information you provide. Again, that's why I say I don't think you should be sending a QWR to a debt collector. Okay? Because if you try to come later and do TCPA claims, they're going to claim, well, you sent us a QWR. You had your name, your address, your telephone number, and you did a modification and all that kind of stuff. You provided us that information. You have to be careful. Them sending you modification paperwork, which many times they will send if you're in default, is an attempt to collect the debt. They're making you an offer, right, for you to pay something, correct? But there's a demand for payment, correct? Exactly. So we're going to take a couple-minute break, come back and do Thor Trivia. You can call in 657-383-0332 if you want to participate. 657-383-0332. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes. All right, we are back. Welcome to Thor Radio Network. We are in part two of our show, which is Thor Trivia. If you want to participate in Thor Trivia, you can just call in to the show number, 657-383-0332. Thor Trivia is an event that we design here at Thor to give our listeners, members, and participants the opportunity to demonstrate their knowledge by offering an opinion of a dunning notice that was sent in randomly by one of our listeners or members. So what we do is we read that letter. We allow you to call in and point out, if you would, in 1 minute, any violations you may see or hear that may be a violation of the consumer protection laws. So it's a chance for the audience to interact. Or you can just stand by and listen. Those of you in the chat, if you have an answer, you can also type in your answer in the chat, and I'll toggle back and forth between the call-in numbers and the chat. So I believe Law 6 in the chat said they wanted to get some of this. So this is your opportunity to get involved. I got a couple of stunning letters here that I'm going to use. Tell the two people. One is by, I'll keep the name anonymous, but it's Lecaj, L-E-C-A-J. And they were notified that their letter, Dunning letter, will be featured on today's show. So hopefully they're listening. Maybe it'll be some violations in there, maybe not. All right. So we're going to start off with the first Dunning letter. Of course, my panel will have an opportunity to chime in 15 seconds. Can't think about it forever. Need to write down, Layla will keep score. And whatever violations you see, you can't repeat those same violations that either caller or anyone in the chat already mentioned. So if somebody feels it's a violation of the SCRA or and they mention that, then that's taken off the table. You would have to mention something different. All right? So, where are we going to go first? Let's go first to Lakai's letter. This is a Dunning letter. I'm going to read it. It's from a collection company.
Some people say, you shouldn't be naming a collection company, Brother Truth.
I don't care. All right, this is a debt collection company, Alliance One. And it starts out with, of course, their letterhead, naming who they are, has a telephone number and a date. All right? It has an account number. Has the name of the consumer, has an account number, it has a client reference number, and has a client name, which is Capital One Bank, and it has a PIN number. When the contents of the Dunning letter is as such, your account has been referred to our office for collection. If this has been an oversight on your behalf, mail the balance in full to our office. If you are experiencing financial difficulties, call our office and a representative will assist you in negotiating a suitable arrangement. They give a telephone number. Unless you notify this office within 30 days after receiving this notice that you dispute the validity of the debt or any portion thereof, this office will assume this debt is valid. If you notify this office in writing within 30 days from receiving this notice that you dispute this debt or any portion thereof, this office will obtain verification of the debt or obtain a copy of a judgment and mail you a copy of such judgment or verification. If you request this office in writing within 30 days after receiving this notice, this office will provide you with the name and address of the original creditor if different from the current creditor. As of the date of this letter, you owe $2,958.92. Your account balance may be periodically increased due to the addition of accrued interest and or other charges if so provided in your agreement with the original creditor. If you would like to set up a payment arrangement online, you can visit us at the website. This communication is from a debt collector. This is an attempt to collect the debt, and any information obtained will be used for that purpose. Notice of important rights. You have the right to make a written or oral request that telephone calls regarding your debt not be made to you at your place of employment. Any such oral request will be valid for only 10 days unless you provide written confirmation of the request postmarked or delivered within 7 days of such request. You may terminate this request by writing to the debt collector. Office hours are from 8 to 8, and this is a number you can reach us at. And that is the letter. All right. So we're going to go to the lines. I know we have a caller here that's been in queue since the beginning of the show. I don't know if they want to participate or they have a question. We'll see. 610-1094. You're on Thor Radio, Thor Trivia. You have a question, or are you participating in the trivia? 610-1094. Well, that's fine. All right, so that's the letter. I don't have any callers in queue, so I'm going to go to the chat, see if anybody in the chat. Law 6, you said you wanted some of this, and I believe Law North Shore, MA, might have an interest in answering the trivia and see whether they perceive any violation of any of the consumer protection laws within that Dunning notice. Or if not, if you're in the chat, you can call in 657-383-0332. So Law 6. Okay, so North Shore said they're at work. All right, Law 6, where you at? All right, let me try this. 610-1094. Are you in? Are you on the line? All right. All right. I guess everybody's scared. Well, they want to sit back and... Miss Allen said, I'm still learning. Wish I could participate. Don't know. You know more than you think. All right. Let me go to my panel then. Let me see. And then I'm going to go to the Yama, too. The Yama aced it last time. I think she beat all of y'all. And see if any of them want to discern. Rudy, are you there?
Yes, I'd like to volunteer, as a matter of fact. I'm not sure if I'm going to be right or not.
I'm going to let Rudy go, then I'm going to let the Yama go. I'm going to see if the elders. Elders.
Oh, God. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yes.
Okay. I'm not sure if I'm going to be right, but based on what you said today about the interest rate, if I'm not mistaken, further down in that document when you read it, there was something about them going to charge you with the interest rate. I can't remember exactly what it was, but that would be something that I would focus on. Perhaps if
okay.
you read that.
It says, as of the date of this letter, you owe $2,958.92. Your account balance may be periodically increased due to the addition of accrued interest or other charges if so provided for in your agreement with the original creditor.
Okay, well, there's two things there. One is going to be the interest rate, and then it's going to go back to the agreement with the original creditor. So I would focus in on those two. I can't go in right now and say which violations they've done precisely, but I'd say at least there's two there, in my opinion.
Okay, so you feel there's a violation possibly with accrued interest?
Yes,
and other charges. And other charges.
Yes, definitely.
Okay. Okay. All right, I'll take that. Let me go to the Yama, and I'm going to mute you out just because you got a little echo, mother.
Okay.
All right. And let me find the Yama. All right, Yama, you set it on fire before. What do you think about that letter I just read?
Well, the account number. Now, if they assigned an account number to it and the account number on the original contract is different, then that's not correct. You can't – my understanding, you can't give a – you can't mention an account number if it doesn't go back to the original account number.
Well, they did, Mother. They did an account number, and then they did a reference number, which is okay.
Reference number, okay.
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. Well, the money can't be calculated. You can question the money figure that they gave. That wouldn't be, you know, valid. And they did state that they were a debt collector.
Okay. So they stated that they were a debt collector. Which is true, not a violation, but they did do that.
Oh, it's
and
not.
Why do you say the money? Why do you say the alleged money amount is not accurate?
Because they said because one thing about you had stated about the interest rate, they don't know how to calculate that, especially machines that they calculate the interest rate, and if that includes interest, they don't have the figures. They don't. Debt collectors don't have the correct amount that you owe because they're always adding something into it. Wouldn't it have to be based on when the debt was bought from the creditor, the amount that the creditor had on its books? That would have to be the same amount. It can't be different. So they can't really they would have to verify that amount for me. Where did you get it from? How did you add it up to get this amount?
Okay.
Because I'm always interested in what I'm paying for anything. I want to know, you know, the amount that I'm paying that is accurate.
Okay. I agree with that. Anything else?
I'm thinking, I know there's a whole lot of other stuff here, but the main thing that popped out to me was the account number. And if they're referencing the original account number, then that would be valid. But if they assign a different account number, you know, it's not pertaining to the consumer.
Okay. All right, Mother. I'll write that down. We'll see.
Okay.
Thank you. All
yes,
right, good job.
Will.
All right. All right, let's see. Ms. Allen says she's nervous. Mr. Ponte says 1692. What, Mr. Ponte? You said 1692-3, communication with third-party employer. How did you come up with that? Third-party employer. You're saying 1692-3. Why don't you explain that? Unique is in the house, in the chat, said it has to be separated. Okay, so Unique is saying that the interest and the principal has to be separated. All right? Interest and principal, separate charges. Okay. All right, Unique, we're going to go with that. We'll go with that. Anybody else? All right, we got a couple of callers here. Let's see if they want to chime in. Hold on one second. 352-7698, you're on Thor Trivia. Do you have a answer to the Dunning letter?
No, I have a question.
All right, I'm going to put you back on hold. We'll come back to you.
Okay.
All right. All right. 1111, you're on Thor Radio. Thor Trivia, do you have a answer to the Dunning letter?
I will give it a shot. Excellent call, by the way, Sharif. I like the way you broke down the QWR in the and the notice of dispute letter. That was excellent reasoning.
Thank you, sir.
I believe that the it's a lot of double speak when they're talking about you can dispute the debt, and then they first say you could dispute it in 30 days, then they say you can do it in oral and writing, and then if you don't do it in writing in 7 days, then they're going to go back to you. That's all doublespeak, and that doesn't meet the least sophisticated consumer understanding. So I don't know exactly where, you know, what that would be under 1692, but that definitely is confusing.
Okay, let's read it again and see if it's confusing. Unless you notify this office within 30 days after receiving this notice that you dispute the validity of this debt or any portion thereof, this office will assume the debt is valid. If you notify this office in writing within 30 days from receiving this notice that you dispute the debt or any portion thereof, this office will obtain verification of the debt or a copy of the judgment and mail you a copy of such judgment or verification. If you request this office in writing within 30 days after receiving this notice, this office will provide you the name and address of the original creditor if different from the current creditor.
Okay, then there was something else in there that you read about, something within, if you do it in orally in
okay.
seven days, and then you don't follow it up in writing, then that's the confusing part.
Okay.
That starts getting into
right.
so many different numbers
I'll read
and
that
everything
again.
Else.
Notice. Okay, notice of important rights. You have the right to make a written or oral request or telephone calls regarding your debt not be made to you at your place of employment. Any such oral request will be valid for only 10 days unless you provide written confirmation of the request postmarked or delivered within 7 days of such request. You may terminate this request by writing to the debt collector. Is that what you're talking about?
No, I thought there was something else that you read in there about if you did it verbally that you had to follow it up in writing, otherwise it was something else. I was like, I couldn't follow it all.
Yeah, that
was
the section
you know,
I just read. Yeah, that was the section
okay.
I just read, notice of important right. That was the only 7 day and writing and oral and written. Yeah.
Yeah, it just
so you
seems
feel
like
that language
a lot
is confusing?
Of... Yes, I do.
Okay.
I think there's
all right.
a lot of numbers there's
I'll
a lot of numbers
that.
To kind of okay.
Good job. Anything else?
And I do agree with what Rudy said with the I think it's 1692F where I'm trying to remember now because it's you're trying to do this off the top of your head. You don't actually have the document in front of you to kind of you're trying to remember everything. And I'm not writing down
mm-hmm.
the violations, but that first one, I think it was F 1692F1 or F2 with that situation
okay.
there.
All right. I like that.
I yield the floor.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. That's some good input. Good input. That was pretty good. I'm going to note that. Layla, hopefully you have that. Now, let's see. Let's go back to the chat before I go to my panel. They threatened to contact employer within 5 days. Mr. Plani, when did they threaten to contact an employer? I don't remember that in the letter. Are you trying to be like Mr. Scroggin over there and you're trying to instigate a debt collector to perform in a violation? Ms. Tamara said they changed the account number. I don't know if that's true. They had an account number and they had a reference number, so they didn't change it in that particular instance. All right. Let's see what else. That's about it. All right. Let me go to my panel because I got another letter to get to. All right. So... let's see, Lori, what do you think right quick?
Right quick, I'll take 1692E10 for 2000, Bob, on false representation.
All right.
They were representing that they represented in the letter that they represented Capital One Bank. And as we all know, they bought that debt. More than likely. They don't represent
well,
Capital One.
Where did they represent that they were representing
they
Capital
that.
One Bank?
They said
okay.
that.
Okay, let me read it. Your account has been referred to our office for collection.
Ah.
If this.
Well, still,
mm-hmm.
referred. Capital One didn't refer that.
Okay. All right, so you want to focus on the referred to our office for collections.
Yeah.
And what would you say that would be a violation
about.
Of?
I'm doing the false representation, sir. 1692E10.
Okay, so you're going E10 on the refer to our office for collections from Capital One.
Sure, we'll go outside the box
okay.
and point out something
okay.
different.
Okay. All right. What else?
There's a ton of it, but. Let's go with also, well, no, I can't because he pointed out 1692F1. Good job there. That was the point that I made earlier today.
Okay, you only get one. You only get one, so you leave one for everybody else.
Well,
all right, you got your one, so you're going to go to the refer.
All right.
All right. Layla, what you got?
Yes. Okay, well, I had a 1692J A and B. I don't know that anyone called that one out.
1692J A and B, all right. How do you justify that? J is furnishing deceptive forms.
Yes, just a second. Let me go back to it. Yes, create false belief in a consumer that a person other than the creditor of such consumer is participating in the collection of or an attempt to collect a debt. So that would be A.
Okay. All right. I'll take that into advisement. And Mother, did Mother go? Yeah, I think she said. Mother, did you go? Rudy? I think she did go. Yes, she did go.
All right. Yes, I did. I was first.
All right, you was first. All right, so law says came in late. All right, so let's get some results on this. Let's see what we got. See what we may have. All right, I'm going to read it one more time. I'll give you what I see. Your account has been transferred to our office for collections. If this has been an oversight on your behalf, mail the balance in full to our office. If you are experiencing financial difficulties, call our office and a representative will assist you in negotiating a suitable arrangement. Unless you notify this office within 30 days after receiving this notice that you dispute the validity of the debt or any portion thereof, this office will assume the debt is valid. If you notify this office in writing within 30 days from receiving this notice that you dispute this debt or any portion thereof, this office will obtain verification of the debt or obtain a copy of a judgment and mail you a copy of such judgment or verification. If you request this office in writing within 30 days after receiving this notice, this office will provide you with the name and address of the original creditor if different from the current creditor. As of the date of this letter, you owe $2,958.92. Your account balance may be periodically increased due to the addition of accrued interest or other charges, if so, provided in your agreement with the original creditor. If you'd like to set up a payment arrangement online, you can visit us online at whatever. This communication is from a debt collector. This is an attempt to collect the debt, and any information obtained will be used for that purpose. Notice of important rights. You have the right to make a written or oral request for telephone calls regarding your debt not be made to you at your place of employment. Any such oral request will be valid for 10 days unless you provide written confirmation of the request postmark or delivered within 7 days of such request. You may terminate this request by writing to the debt collector. All right. What I see, all right, Layla, tell me what you have a list of what was said.
Okay. We had Yama, who said the amount, which would be 1692-2A. You have Lori that said 1692-E10. Unique said the interest and the principal needed to be separate. I don't know if that falls under 1692-E2A or not. We have the young, that man, I don't remember his name, I'm sorry. You said 1692-F1 that had to do with the interest, okay, that would be the interest and the fees and the expenses. So that would be 1692-1. And let's see, what else do I have? That's all that I have written down. I know some other people made statements, but I did not go back and refer.
All right. Well, I see an account number here, so it alleges an account number. It has a client reference number. I don't see anything wrong with that. It says the client, Capital One Bank, N.A. I don't know about client. I mean, client for who? Client reference numbers for who? I mean, are they my client or is it your client? So let's talk about client for a minute. To me, the mentioning of client has nothing to do with the consumer, but maybe a business relationship between the debt collector and maybe the alleged creditor. So I don't see why client would be there. I would think that creditor would be there. So I don't know what the client means, all right? But we can assume, which we want to be careful not to do, but we don't want to get all crazy and scientific on these letters.
We just want to point out obvious violations and maybe be a little creative in tying them all together. So your account has been referred to our office for collections. I'm going to go with Lori on that, that, you know, how do we know it's been referred to me implies that you are collecting for the creditor, all right? Referred to our office for collections means that you're working in a capacity collecting for the creditor, all right? Client tends to give me that presumption as well. But we don't know that you didn't buy the debt, whether you're working for Capital One. So
Rudy?
Did we lose the call?
I don't know what happened. He
well,
went
okay.
0-30 on us.
Well, that's okay. We're all still here, okay? We'll just have an open discussion until he gets back. Apparently, we just kind of lost him there for a moment. No, I still see him, but I think maybe he just muted out or something happened to him there. I don't know for a second. I was thinking about what he was saying in reference to the Dunning letter. I think one of the things that we may have to do is obviously take more copious notes when those letters are going down, because one of the things I did say that I thought I saw was something about that interest rate, that they couldn't add that in or put that back in. That was something that Yama had said last week about the money. They need to have a great foundation of having that money come in. I see something going on here with the computer, but anyway, I think if I'm wrong, isn't that something, I don't know the number, where it definitely says that the amount has to be confirmed. They can't give you conflicting amounts. Am I correct?
That's right. And also it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the call in 1692F1, the attempt to collect any amount.
Okay, can you hear me?
Here you are.
Y'all can hear me now?
We can.
I don't know what happened before. I was fine. I was talking. But anyway, I'll continue. So, you know, unless you notify this office within 30 days, that language is okay. They just separate it, whether you do it in writing or you notify us, and then they say if you request it within 30 days. A little bit of double, triple speak, but I don't see a violation there. At the date of this letter, you owe $2,958.92. Your account balance may be periodically increased due to the addition of accrued interest and other charges if so provided for in your agreement with your original creditor. That I would definitely feel is a violation. You're sending me a Dunning notice, and that Dunning notice would be in violation of 1692G. Okay? 1692G, which is why you would follow up with a notice of dispute, 1692G requires that the debt collector validate the debt, okay? And part of validating the debt is the amount of the debt in 1692G1, all right? So what do you mean that there may be a periodic increase due to accrued interest? What is the interest rate? What is the principal amount? So when Unique said separate, yes, exactly. You're not providing me the amount of the debt. Your Dunning notice is incomplete. You're not telling me what interest is, and it says if so provided in your agreement. Well, if you're the creditor, don't you know your agreement, whether it provides for interest? Am I supposed to guess? All right? So a notice of dispute would definitely cover that. All right? And then look at the fact that I would think also it's a misrepresentation of the 1692E. I would agree with Lori on 10, all right, and 2A. All right, and let's read what that is. All right, E is false or misleading representations. And I would think under 2, the false representation of the character amount or legal status of any debt, all right, because, I mean, what is the character amount? All right, so I would think you would have a violation there. All right, I'm also going to go with 1692, I believe Rudy said.
I'm going to go with F1 under unfair practices. The collection of any amount, including any interest, fee, charge, or expense incidental to the principal obligation unless the amount is expressly authorized by the agreement creating the debt or permitted by law. As a least sophisticated, unsophisticated consumer who's gullible, trusting, and naive, how am I supposed to send you a check? If I send you a check for $29.58, you're telling me there's interest. What interest? What balance? And the account balance may periodically increase due to the addition of accrued interest or other charges. So you have two things. Well, what's the interest and what other charges? Is that not demonstrated in the $29.58.92 that you say that I owe? And if you're the creditor assuming that position, then wouldn't you know what it's allowed for in that agreement? So I'm agree with you on that. I'm going to disagree with you, Layla, on 1692J. I don't think that's creating a form. That's a letter, and the forms are more so like you see assignments or legal forms, things of that nature. That may be confusing, but I like the way you're thinking in terms of the belief that they may be insinuating something when it's not exactly what it is they're insinuating. All right?
Can you
we're going to go 1692F1. We're going to go G.
Mm-hmm.
2, I believe it was, 1692E2A on that portion. Now I'm going to tell you a portion that all of y'all didn't get, and I'm surprised. And I'm going to read to you the section. You have the right to make a written or oral request that telephone calls regarding your debt not be made to you at your place of employment. Any such oral request will be valid for only 10 days unless you provide written confirmation of the request postmarked or delivered within 7 days of such request. You may terminate this request by writing to the debt collector. I don't know where the heck they got that from, because if you call me, and we don't have an established business relationship pursuant to 47 U.S.C. 227A2, which defines, let me just tell you what that is the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, which defines the term established business relationship for purposes of the subsection, shall mean a include a relationship between a person or entity and a business subscriber subject to the same terms applicable under such section to a relationship between a person or entity and a residential subscriber. B is an established business relationship shall be subject to any time limitation established pursuant to paragraph 2G. All right, so unless you have an established business relationship, all right, meaning that you gave written permission to be contacted on that cell phone number, all right, I believe that that is definitely a violation of the TCPA. I don't know where in the TCPA it says that you have a right to make a written or oral request that telephone calls regarding the debt not be made to your place of employment. Who gave you permission to call my place of employment? If you sent me a Dunning notice and I have a 30-day window to dispute that, well, definitely you should be calling within that 30 days, which you here stated that I can still dispute. But then even afterwards, what kind of established business relationship do we have for you to call anybody? Okay? Again, I'm not 100%, but I'm going to say where you get this, the request should be valid for 10 days unless you provide written confirmation of the request postmarked. I don't even understand, or deliver it within 7 days of such request. Like, where did you get that from? What law is that supported in? You may terminate this request by writing to the debt collector, and the request will only be valid for 10 days. Like, where is that? Is that just a company policy? So I'm going to say that's a violation of the TCPA, and I'm going to tie it in as a violation under 1692. I'm going to go E on that. A misrepresentation. All right?
How about C?
And I justify that. Huh?
I said, how about C? CA3?
Read it for me.
Along with that, hold on a minute here. Let me pull it up real fast so I can be correct on it. It's on the communication
on 1689 CCA without prior.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about C where it says that.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then on CA3, it's at the consumer's place of employment if the debt collector knows or has reason to know that the consumer's employer prohibits the consumer from receiving such communication.
Okay, so let's look at the 1692C. Communication with the consumer generally, without the prior consent of the consumer given directly to the debt collector or the express permission of a court of competent jurisdiction, a debt collector may not communicate with the consumer in connection with the collection of any debt. One, at an unusual time or place to be known or should be known to be inconvenient. All right, if the debt collector knows the consumer is represented by an attorney, all right, and at the consumer's place of employment, if the debt collector knows or have reason to know that the consumer's employer prohibits the consumer from receiving such communication. So how would they know that your place of employment allows them to call and verify your employment when maybe you might have disputed the debt? So you have ceasing communications, which is what your buddy over there, Mr. Scroggin, did, is he was using 1692CC by ceasing communication. If a consumer notifies a debt collector in writing that the consumer refuses to pay a debt or that the consumer wishes the debt collector to cease further communication with the consumer, the debt collector shall not communicate further with the consumer with respect to such debt except to advise the consumer that the debt collector's further efforts are being terminated, to notify the consumer that the debt collector or creditor may invoke specific remedies which are ordinarily invoked by such debt collector or creditor, and it goes on. So that's what Mr. Scroggin was doing. He was just sent a letter saying, you know, he refused to pay. All right? And they communicated with him again. So if you want to say this is a violation of the TCPA, you don't have a right to call me or anybody else, especially on a disputed debt. But, you know, it's a violation of the TCPA because you don't have my express written permission to communicate with me at all via cell phone. All right? So other than that, and I don't think you need much more, I would concede that this letter definitely has several violations. They may lead to substantial damages under the consumer protection laws, which includes your state. Okay, the amount is not specified. What's principal? What's interest? What's the interest? If I was to pay, how can I pay you? You're telling me to pay you in full, but when I pay you in full, you're telling me I might be subject to other charges I don't even know about. Now, that's clearly a problem. Okay, clearly a problem. So that's that letter. All right. So I like everybody's participation. Everybody had good participation. Unique jumping in there, and that was pretty good. That was pretty good. I like that. That was good. All right, let's go to the next Dunning letter. This is one that I've touched on before. All right, and it's regarding a notice of trustee sale for those of you in California, right? And California, as you know, is a non-judicial state, and you have, as your state consumer protection law, the Rosenthal Act. And this is for Tina out there. So she sent me a notice of dispute and then a notice of trustee sale and all of those condition precedent documents that are sent in California. All right. So she first got a letter, and it's supposedly a notice of dispute, and it has next payment due, and it has current monthly payment, total monthly payments, uncollected NSF fees, zero, other fees, zero, corporate advance balance, $21,376. I don't know what that is and whether corporate advance balance, first of all, is named in your contract. That's one. And well, it's collectible under the consumer protection laws, and has partial payment balance of zero, and has a default amount, all right?
So on the bottom of it says this company is a debt collector, and any information will be used for that purpose. So there's compliance there with 1692G. All right, and this is from Home Loan Servicing, which is a debt collector, and they named themselves as such. All right, but then subsequently they went into a notice of trustee sale, which in my opinion is also attempt to collect the debt. For some of you, I went over this notice and how it is filed usually in the county recorder. So, in my opinion, 1692J would apply, furnishing documents or deceptive documents. All right? And the notice of trustee sale has, you know, basically that you're in default under your deed of trust, and unless you take action to protect your property, it may be sold at a public auction. If you need an explanation of the nature of the proceedings against you, you should contact a lawyer. How nice of you. On this particular date, this particular trustee, appointed trustee is one thing you need to look at. Are they duly appointed? Actually, it says that, you know, they're going to be conducting a foreclosure, allegedly, down at the county courthouse on this particular day. And it says, as beneficiary, this particular bank will sell at public auction sale to the highest bidder for cash. Cashier's check drawn on the state or national bank, cashier's check drawn by a state or federal credit union. All right, we have 90 seconds left in the live stream, so if you want to continue to call, you need to call in 657-383-0332. For those of you in the chat, you can call in to continue. All right. Appreciate all of you participating. Unique, good to hear from you and everybody else. If you don't continue with us, we're going to go another hour at least. Well, we're going to go to the end. So it goes on and it says, you know, the street address commonly known as, and it says the unpaid balance of $365,740. Right? And this amount is consistent with, I believe, what they allege is owed on the account. All right, so the next letter says notice of sale, where the sale is going to be held, and your property is scheduled to be sold on this particular date at this particular address it gives. All right, and then on the third notice, this is what I want to bring to everyone's attention. I want to read this to you so you understand exactly you're dealing with in California. It says, notice to potential bidders. If you, and this is to bidders who wants to come there and bid on buying this consumer's property. It says, if you're considering bidding on this property lien, you should understand that there are risks involved in bidding at a trustee auction. You will be bidding on a lien, not the property itself. Okay? You'll be bidding on a lien. Now, they just told you, they were selling your property. But they're telling the potential buyers that's coming in to buy it that you're bidding on a lien, not the property. Placing the highest bid at the trustee auction does not automatically entitle you to free and clear ownership of the property. Well, why? Because you're not bidding on the property. You're bidding on the lien. But they told the consumer that her property is being foreclosed and sold. You should also be aware that the lien being auctioned off, not the property, may be a junior lien. That means they may be somewhere second or third in place. They may not be the first lien position. So if you're not the first lien position and you may be a junior lien, how the heck are you selling a property alleging that you're first lien position? Make sense of that. If you are the highest bidder at the auction, you may be responsible for paying off all of lien senior to the lien being auctioned off before you can receive clear title to the property. Again, how are you selling the property in the first lien position if you're not in the first lien position? And if you buy that property, you might have to pay some other lien holders off. Interesting. You are encouraged to investigate the existence, priority, and size of outstanding liens that may exist on the property by contacting the county recorder's office or a title insurance agency, either of which may charge you a fee for this information.
Okay? So I want to ask you a question. How do you sell a property when you're not in first lien position? And then how are you telling the consumer, the homeowner, to sell a property when you're really selling the lien? And if you're selling a lien, they're telling you that the lien may or may not be accurate, and there may be other liens. In other words, they don't know what they're selling you, but they're just selling you something. And you're going to believe that it's something that after you buy it, you're going to go down and knock on the homeowner's door and tell them to get out. Well, I don't know what they're doing in California, but this particular section right here is very interesting to me because it demonstrates that there's some confusion in there, that you're threatening foreclosure. Okay? You're threatening foreclosure. All right? And foreclosure is selling property. But in here, you're telling the bidders that you're not selling the property, you're selling a lien. And that even if they buy the lien, that don't mean they own the property. So I'm just going to go with common sense, and y'all make sense out of that, y'all in California, but I'm going to go with purposes of the consumer protection laws under 1692E 5, which is a threat to take an action that cannot legally be taken or that is not intended to be taken. All right? I'm also going to go with 6, 1692E6, the false representation or implication that a sale, referral, or other transfer of any interest in the debt shall cause the consumer to lose any claim or defense to the payment of the debt or become subject to any practice prohibited by this title. Well, if you sell my property, then I'm losing any claim, and also they're doing it in a non-judicial way, which is an issue with 1692I. All right? So we have that going on. 1692E10, which is use of false representation or deceptive means to collect or attempt to collect any debt or to obtain information concerning the consumer. And, of course, 1692I was saying that any debt collector is taking an action against real property should do so judicially in a district either where the property is located or where the consumer resides. So you have a notice of default, which demonstrates that the debt is in default, thereby, in my opinion, subjecting the debt collector to the FDCPA. Then you have that confusing language in there where you can say, I didn't know whether I should be buying a lien or the property. They threaten to sell my property, but then they're telling the bidders that it's a lien, and they're telling me that maybe they may not be in first position. Then how can the junior sell the senior position? That was confusing. So it prohibited me from paying anything, which resulted in actual damages because they sold my property. Unfair practices. Okay, I'm going to go with that. F6, taking or threatening to take any non-judicial action to affect dispossession or disablement of property. A, if there is no present right to possession of the property claimed as collateral through an enforceable security interest. How can they have an enforceable security interest when they said they may be junior or senior and they're selling the lien, not the property, but they told you they were selling the property? Subjecting you to a person coming to your house telling you to get out the house because they bought your house at the sale, the property at the sale, and that's what they're going to say. But you're going to say, no, you didn't buy the property. You bought a lien, and you have to make sure that lien is perfected. And what I'm saying is the lien is not perfected. You may have notice of a lien in the county recorder, but that lien is not what you think it is. That's not a lien, in my opinion. Or it's not a perfected lien. And B, if there's no present intention to take possession of the property. Well, in a notice of bidders, they're not taking possession of the property. They're selling a lien, but they're telling you they're taking your property. And C, if the property is exempt by law from such dispossession or disablement. Well, it is exempt if they're a debt collector trying to take a non-judicial action in violation of 1692I. All right? That's all I got on that. Ridiculous. I don't know how confusing one can get with that type of language. We're selling a lien or we're selling the property. You got to get out. I bought the property, but no, you bought a lien. I dispute that lien. That's not really a lien. That's just notice of a lien. You have to prove the existence of a lien. Well, the person who sold it to you don't know whether it's a junior lien, a senior lien, a upper lien, a lower lien, a side lien, vertical lien. They don't know what they sold you. They just was hoping you didn't care, and you just came down there being just as confused as I am and gave them some money. And when you signed over that money to them, you took the money. Okay? Subject to recourse. No recourse. Don't come back. Once you buy it at your own risk. That was basically what that is, one of those FDA warnings. You take this medicine at your own risk. So, Ms. Tina, that's how I would look at your Dunning letter. Ms. Lakash, we demonstrated yours. We appreciate everybody participating in Thor Trivia. Hopefully it advances your knowledge and gets you thinking. We added another element in the TCPA because that language in there talking about you have to send a letter to stop them from calling your job, or and it only lasts for 7 days, and you got to send another one. Like, who? If you're a debt collector and I dispute the debt, who gives you the authority to give me a job to do, to deal with you on an ongoing basis where I have to communicate with you within 10 days and I got to prove that I postmarked something? Like, in and of itself, that I don't know if that would be a standalone violation, but definitely when you're putting together violations, you want to give multiple angles and looks at those violations and add it all up to the court so you show them that it may fluff up other violations. Okay? So you just can't go with a slim violation. You want to add some substance to it. When you give enough substance to it and you give multiple angles of one violation, then you kind of secure that violation to the court as a cause of action. Sounds better. It looks better. Court can put their mind around and be like, yeah, I see what they're saying. They're saying a lien, then they're saying the property, then they're saying that they got to get out, and then they did subject them to somebody coming and threatening to evict them based on the fact that they bought the property, and that's what they're going to say. They bought the property, and you're going to say, no, you didn't. And you had full disclosure that you wasn't buying the property. So why are you trying to evict me? Well, you bought a lien. And that lien is disputed. Ari, Layla, Rudy, y'all have anything about that?
I agree. That I think that's just powerful right there, on the lien versus the property, the sale of property. And it makes me think of the whole bait and switch thing, you know. It's just a bunch of nonsense. Go get them, California.
What I was going to say is this is a perfect introduction to the webinar for Saturday. If you have any literature in your possession that talks about your property being transferred or your property about to be sold or an assignment or a trustee or an appointment of trustee or substitute a trustee, get your pencil, your paper, and be ready for Saturday's class.
That's right, especially if you're in California and most of y'all experiencing these type actions and behaviors, confusing language and notices and demands made upon you to send somebody a letter in 7 or 10 days to stop them from doing what they're not legally able to do anyway. People telling you to get out your house, selling your property when it really is on the lien and they really don't know where the lien is. If they don't know where the lien is, how can you legally have a lien on the property? Does the county recorder not tell you what liens are filed and which ones are first and second? I'm not getting it. Somebody needs to get it. You have the Rosenthal Act in California, which is a mini version of the federal FDCPA.
those two combined with this type of a letter, in my opinion, put you in a good position, even after foreclosure. Y'all need to get on it. Y'all missing the money. All right. Let's go to 623-2632. This is, I think, unique. What's happening?
You are correct. Greetings, Sharif. Greetings, everyone. Greetings, Queen.
What's going on, sister? Please.
Nothing much. I've been listening and I've been doing some translating for myself and for my family. So it's been an interesting phone call today, because I don't know why today it seemed to have clicked. And, you know, I listen to you quite often, so a lot of times I get a little lost, but I think it's because I wasn't in a situation, and until I put myself in my family situation, I'm now able to understand a little better. So what I got from it today, now that I'm in this situation, was amazing. I like the trivia thing, and I like how you set it up before. I love how you set it up beforehand, because I was able to, for whatever reason today, really pick up on it. So as I'm looking at the letter, or I'm not looking at the letter, but I'm remembering what the letter looked like, I'm able to now look at it and break it down. And I think a lot of people might be having a problem with that. But so my comment today is, this is what I did to understand these letters, because they're confusing. They really are. Even when you were reading them, they're confusing when you don't know what you're really looking at. And then listening to you, you have so much information. So I know people go back and back and back to listen just to one show to get all your information, because you give a lot, and you know that. So thank you for that. But for me, when I look at, and the late in Queens too, of course, always, they always put their input in, and Mama, I know you on here, so I have to give my greetings. When you're looking at these papers, if you look at the papers, instead of looking at them in a fearful mode, what I have now done is I'm like, oh, during this trivia today, I can look at this, and now I'm like, okay, now I know what to look for. And the three things that they're saying that we need to look for, correct me if I'm wrong, Sharif, when you're looking at the letter, instead of, for me, maybe this is just my generation, don't even read the letter. Open it up, look at the letter, and you're going to look for three things. The three things you want to look for is, number one, charges. If you see anything on charges on there, read the sentence before, read the sentence after. When you see it in charges, and especially if the charges are just in bold and they're just on the page, right there you know you need to go to the FDPCA, is that correct? 1692, and you need to go to E, C, E, F, and G right away. That, you know, right away, all you right. Probably have those four to five charges there. Right there. If it's just plain as day, it's not broken down, there's nothing, no real explanatory thing to it, you know right there, you got at least four different subsections of charges right there, just off that. So look at your charges. Don't even, try not to get upset and confused about this, because that was my mistake, because I'm reading this and I'm getting more confused every time that I read it. If I would have known just to open it up, okay, yeah, okay, you got charges, really though, okay, and then you go to your little book or you go on your website and you look up those four things, bam, got you. That's going to give you the confidence to now further go ahead and look at the other thing. Another thing, if they have anything in there about phone calls, right there, anything telling you what you need to be doing with a phone call, anything, sounds to me like that's the TCPA and 1692 C and E. Go look it up. Right there, anything they got to say to you about phone calls, you take them two sentences before the phone calls and after the phone calls. Wait a minute, that's exactly what they was talking about. Look, TCPCA, 1692 C and E. Bam, exactly what Sharif is talking about. And then the next thing, now you're rolling. You got that next confidence level. Okay, phone calls. They got charges on here. You're talking about 8 different violations off that. Just by them, the 4 sentences. But them doggone things be 2 or 3 pages long. They feel like they 2 or 3 pages long. Even when them ones was a page, so they put all that confusing jibber-jabber in there. But if you know to go to the charges, boom, you got 4. Go to the phone calls, boom, you got 2 more. Last thing, they talking about notices, and I don't care what kind of letter. This coming from a debt collector, that's the only thing you need to look for. I'm a debt collector. Oh, really? Really? That's who you is? Okay. Charges, phone calls, boom. Notices, too? Oh, you got me on. You trying to file some paperwork. You see words like liens, trust? Look for lien and trust. Don't even, you see them 2 words on there? What you going to do? The next thing you going to do is you going to go ahead and you go to that 1692E, and you going to look at I. Boom, you finish. Instead of looking at this and getting fearful like I was, like I said, I'm speaking to the people that know what I went through, and this wasn't even for me. This is for my family. When I was like, what are they talking about? But they know they're talking to people that are naive and gullible, so they do it on purpose. So once you know how to decipher the language that they're trying to use, and you take out all the one of my brothers was talking about 75-25. You take out 75% of that, and you look at that 25%. My brother True Freeman, 25% of that. That's what you need to look at. That 25% is the charges, phone calls, notices, paperwork, filing. Those 3 things right there. Don't right. even worry about the rest. That's all I wanted
That's
to say.
Right. That's a good assessment. That's good, sister. You're doing good. Appreciate you stopping by, of course. Thor loves you. We love you. That's one of our creators of Thor. You know, Unique came up with the slogan, Ready, Reset, and Restore, that we use here at Thor, and that was her creation. So everybody had a part in creating that Thor avatar, and we appreciate it. We definitely love her like a sister. And Unique, about your email address, she's definitely a fitness master. When you talk about dieting and eating and fitness and all of that, this is a master right here. So give out your email address for those of us that need to deal better with our health and our eating, losing weight.
Yeah, losing weight, just feeling better. I don't try to go on the losing weight because for me now losing weight has so much more to just losing weight. So you want to feel better. I don't care what type of situation you're in. You don't feel like you can do or say, or you need help with something. You need some translation on something. Call me. Email me. If you need any kind of help, if you're trying to, really, that is my lane. That is my lane. People are my lane. So I want you to feel better. So when you call me, you feel better. Every time I talk to you and email to you, I want people to feel better. So it's a journey that you need to be prepared to get on before you decide to contact me. I like to put that disclaimer on there. I am who I am, and I let you know up front. My email, if All you right. do want to contact with me, is lovefeelgood, LoveFeelGood, @gmail.com.
lovefeelgood@gmail.com. All right. Love you, Unique. Appreciate you coming.
Love you, too. Thank you.
Always
Thanks
come
for
on whenever you like. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Peace. All right. All right, let's go to 352-7698. You're on Thor Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. I'm actually a plaintiff in a lawsuit and an impermissible purpose. Against professional recovery. They did an impermissible pool 2 years ago, and I actually have to do a conference and a joint report scheduled by the federal court with the lawyer. And I was just wanted to know a question as far as when I do this conference with this lawyer,
Is there any specific things that I need to home in as far as the conference?
Yeah, you just need to read Federal Rules of Civil Procedure 26F.
26F. And one other question.
Right.
Is there any, are you in federal court? Yes, I am.
Well, okay, let me ask you a question.
Go ahead. Oh, my question? Okay, my other question was, is there any motion that I could put into the court that can basically relieve this whole situation pretty fast? I was thinking summary judgment, maybe move for summary judgment. Would that be a good move?
No. First of all, I'm going to say this. I mean, did your case initiate in the federal court, or did you start it in small claims court and it was removed to the federal court?
No, it was initiated in the federal court.
And you initiated that complaint as a plaintiff?
Yes.
All right. I'm going to first say to you respectfully that with these questions that you're asking, I don't think you were prepared to file a lawsuit because you should know that
in
you're going to
have 26F. I promise you I wasn't.
Okay, in the beginning, but you still not ready to, you know, after you file your lawsuit and it appears as though you survived a motion to dismiss, you know your Rule 26 is going to be next, and you know you have a certain amount of time to file for summary judgment. That's usually after discovery, and that timing will be set forth in your Rule 26F scheduling order. So,
okay.
But when you ask the question, like, any way I could dispose of it quickly, no. I mean, and those are the things you have to take into account before you file your lawsuit. You have to go through your 26F. Your 26F gives you an opportunity to talk with the other side and counsel about what you're going to be needed and the proposed time limits to your discovery and trial and everything else. It also gives you an opportunity to talk about your case and where you stand and where they stand on a particular case. So it's a conference, right? It's a meeting. It's not anything that's recorded. It's not anything that's in the court. It's something that you and opposing counsel engages in. All right? Well,
okay.
That's in your Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, and you need to read that. And then after that, you will do a joint proposed order in which you guys agreed on as it relates to time restraints or schedule of how you're going to reciprocate discovery and when you anticipate trial and what things you're going to be asking for in discovery. That's important in your Rule 26. You need to specify what you're going to be asking for. Are you going to have any expert witnesses? Are you going to be asked for certain information? That may need to be mentioned in that proposed order. Now, as a pro se litigant, you will normally find some of the attorneys will sort of help you and send you a proposed order, but I don't know if you know what's in it is beneficial to you or not. They're not going to teach you most of the time, but you have to know that what's in it is beneficial to you. Okay? It must be joint. It means you both must agree, okay? Or if there's a problem, then you can just put in a joint order that you disagree on certain things, and the court will make a decision as to how they're going to iron out those differences. But it has to be joint. So that means one of you has to send a proposed order, and if you're a plaintiff, you should be able to do that. And it doesn't sound like you are. But no, summary judgment is not appropriate. You haven't done discovery. How do you know? How do you know you can win just on what you've pleaded? So you need to study those rules as well as your local rules, okay? And under 26F, it will tell you all the requirements, and you can do some research on how those orders are prepared, those joint orders and stipulations. All right?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Good luck. 678-6235. You on Thor Radio? Do you have a question, comment, or concern? Going once, twice.
I'm here.
All right, let's go.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Hello. Okay.
Hi, this is Tamara out of Atlanta. I was calling because I actually got a phone call yesterday from something that I actually paid off 2 years ago, but they transferred it over to some other company, and the person said to me, it's been 24 months, you owe this, you signed an agreement. And I said, I owe you nothing. And you are, I said, are you collecting a debt? He said, yes, I owe you nothing. And if you continue to call me, and then I brought up the Telephone Act, this person called me 6 times right after. How do I handle that situation?
Well, don't handle it like you just handled it. Okay. Don't handle it like you just handled it, first of all. You don't want to scare away somebody coming to you to write you a check. All right. So you don't want to educate the person on the phone at all. Why are you educating them? You want to suck them in. So, okay, so what debt are you calling about? Oh, that debt. Oh, okay. And who's the alleged creditor? Oh, okay. And what's your name and what company do you work for? Okay. What's your telephone number? Okay. And you're saying I owe this debt. How much do I owe? Okay. Well, that's fine. Let me review it. Just send it to me in writing, if you would. All right. And then I'll review it. And you want to get it in writing. You don't want to tell them, oh, you don't call this a telephone communication protection act, and you don't need to be called. No. You see, they called you back anyway. So you have violations there under the TCPA for them calling you. And I believe you have violations definitely under the FDCPA when they sing you in writing what you allegedly owe when you paid it off. So you get that in writing, and you put together your complaint for TCPA and FDCPA based on the fact that it was already paid.
Okay. All right. Okay.
You don't
want
to tell people not to call or call you? Why are you going to tell them not to call and it could be $1,500 per call, $500 for the first and $1,500 for the second retroactive to the first? Why are you going to tell them to stop calling you? I mean,
unless
you don't need the money, Tamara. I mean, if you don't, let them give them my phone number.
But this is the part where I get confused. And what you're saying is I do need to get a letter in writing from them.
I mean, you can. I mean, verbally they're asking. They say, okay, just send it to me in writing. That's all. Let me look at it and I'll respond accordingly. That's all.
Okay.
I mean, that's all. You just argue with them on the phone. I mean, 6 calls at $1,500 is $9,000. Why you keep telling them to stop calling you? Let them leave all the messages they want. There's a possibility I may owe the debt, but I'm not sure. I need you to send it to me in writing. Well, can I call you? They're not going to ask you if they're calling. They're going to call again. All right? And at $1,500 a call, I might offer to bake the guy a cake. Call me tomorrow. I'll let you know if the cake's done. I'm not being scrocking-like, but I'm just telling you, let them keep calling.
Okay?
You don't want to educate anybody. Okay. You just say, okay, and you're a debt collector. Okay, right. And what are you saying? Okay, you can put that to me in writing and just mail it to me. Okay, and you want to record the call if they're recording the call. Look at your wiretap laws for your state, and you want to record the call. If they're recording the call, you can record the call. Record the call. As soon as you get a call from a debt collector and they tell you they're recording, you can record as well. Sometimes they'll just tell you, we are recording this call. I am too. Some states require you not to even tell them that. Some states do. So you got $9,000 just on the call, and then you need to go ahead and get the letter from them and get some more money off of it. Then once you get into sending them a notice and you're ready to sue them, now you can educate them a little bit. You know, this appears to be a violation of the TCPA, and you called me a total of 12 times. I've recorded. And you sent me a notice on a debt that was already paid. Okay? You got harassment under 1692 F and G. Okay? So you got a bunch of things there you need to look into.
So if it was the reverse, if you owe the debt, is it still the same way? Would you still handle it the same way?
Still the same way in terms of whether they had express written permission to call you. It all depends on who it is. If you gave them that number, that creditor that number, okay, the creditor,
mm-hmm.
okay, then that doesn't mean that a debt collector really has the authority to call you. How many debt collectors could you have? I mean, it could be 10. Are you saying that 10 different entities because you decided to transfer the debt or sell the debt? Y'all sell it amongst yourself? You think I'm going to get calls from 10 or 15, 5 or 6 different entities? No, I didn't. That's what the law is for.
I didn't give you express written permission to call me, to contact me. The FDCPA tells you that as well. Has the same language.
Thank
so
you
got a nice little chunk of change there.
Even if I didn't answer the phone?
Even if you didn't answer the phone.
Okay. Because you know we got
you just
we
need
got
to take a snapshot
ways
of
knowing
call.
Who called
you need
now.
To take a snapshot of that call. I'll get your home Bible and skip it.
I got the call log. You know, now the way cell phones
all right,
are,
there you, go.
You can literally pull it up. Okay, thank you.
There you,
sure.
there you
thank
go.
You, thank you. All right.
You're welcome.
Hey.
All right. Thank
hey,
you. All right.
Hey, I want to throw in there real quick to Tamara real fast. Also, they from the first call that they, whenever they initiated calling you, Tamara, they within 5 days from their initial communication, according to 1692G, they were to send you something in writing so that you could dispute the validation of the debt.
That's right.
Just throwing
within
that
5 days,
out
there, girl. Tamara, if they didn't send you a letter after that phone call, it's a violation of G, 1692G. That's a good little call right there. That's a nice little chase. This lion licking his chops on that one. I'm feeling real good about that. I like that one. That's some good money right there. That put some meat on the bones right there. All right. Let's go to Sam 623. No, I'm sorry. That's not Sam. Let's go to... I think that was Sam. Let's go to 412-1568. You're on Thor Radio. Do you have a question?
Yes, definitely. How you doing today?
Well, brother, how you doing?
Good, good. It's always good to hear you, man. I don't know how you do it, man, week after week, man. You come with new stuff all the time, man. It's like you must be a good researcher, got good researchers, but you come with something every week. I got to commend you on that. And
thank you,
but I wanted to ask you, you said that these foreclosures, you were talking about they're selling the lien, not the property. Now, from your experience,
now that's California
you
now. That doesn't mean everywhere. That's California because that language was clearly written into the notice.
Okay. Well, with that being said, if in California, I don't know if you deal with the UCC or not. But, you know, I thought a perfected lien has to be on a UCC 3. And
I know where you're coming from with that, and there is some support for that. But, again, what I tell people is that the UCC is not a per se a liability statute, meaning if they don't do something within the UCC, it could be used as an affirmative defense against an action taken, but you're not going to get any money from them not complying with the UCC. So – far as a lien being recorded in the UCC on a tree, yeah. But if they don't, does that mean there is no lien? First of all, a lien is perceived. Okay? Just because somebody files something that says lien does not mean it meets the requirements of a lien or it has the elements of a lien. Just because you complain that a debt collector did something doesn't mean that that's what they did. Okay, you plead fraud, you have to have the element of fraud. Okay, so, you know, you have to look at and you have to challenge the fact that there is a lien or a perfected lien. And within that, you can probably use some of the language as it relates to the UCC, saying that there's no UCC 3 filed and, you know, things of that nature.
Okay, now when you're saying the elements, you basically – like, if you say fraud, the elements would be the elements of that cause of action, just, you know, whether it's 3 or 4. So who's ever bringing a charge or whatever or affirmative defense, they need to, you know, plead and prove all the elements. Are you referring to that?
Well, you're going to have to prove that there's a perfected lien. Okay,
oh,
what's
okay.
a perfected lien? A security interest and the collateral that's used to secure the performance of a debt. Okay? Okay, so yeah, that's really protected from third-party claims. So, you know, you have to perfect the lien. And there's some time requirements to perfect the lien. You have to do things according to law. You have to do things within the specified amount of time. Okay, so it's protocol. So you can have a lien and don't record that lien or file it appropriately, or there's certain latent or material defects in it, and it's not going to be a perfected lien. Okay? So perfected liens are those liens which a creditor has established a priority. So let's say I can do a loan today with somebody and another loan tomorrow, and do you know that the first person in the courts, first in line, first in time, is going to have that perfected lien? So there's a lot of different dynamics. You need to look into what a perfected lien is. All right. So if you miss a step in the process, you don't have a perfected lien. You have a presumed lien, but it's not perfected.
They would call that basically just a notice of a lien, but not perfected. Would that
well, it's
be
all
notice, language?
Isn't it?
Would you say?
Yeah, it's all notice, isn't it? Assignment is notice.
Yeah.
A mortgage recorded is notice. A deed recorded is notice. You know, when you look at some of the activities of some people out there that said they want to put this on a UCC, it's notice. Status, if you want to do, is notice. Everything is notice because it's not proven. Okay, and just like I give the example, you can go file a notice today and say you own, you know, Manhattan, New York, and all the stores on 125th, and you can go record that, and a county recorder will let you record it, just like the county recorder will let them record a deed or an assignment. Who stops them? That doesn't mean that what they recorded is true. That just means you recorded it. You gave notice to the public. That's why they call it public notice. It didn't say public perfected anything, or it didn't say public evidence, all right? It has to be perfected, has to be authenticated, and there's a legal requirement for them to do so.
Okay, like I said, you always answer my questions. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate you coming again, man, and staying consistent.
All right. Thank you.
All right, peace, man. Thanks. All right, just want to let everybody know that, you know, when we're looking at these mortgages, another thing y'all should remember, and y'all need to write these cases down when we go over them, is the Haddad case, H-A-D-D-A-D, versus Alexander Zelmansky Danner and Furioto. And that was where a consumer sued a debt collection law firm over an alleged homeowners association lien. Okay, so the HOA, Homeowners Association, had filed a lien, and they sold the debt, I guess, and the debt collection law firm sent the notice to the consumer, and he sent back a notice of dispute, and they sent back the recorded lien that was in the county. And he sent back another notice and said, well, what does that mean? Like, explain how you arrived at that amount. And he said specifically identify what that $50 was for. It was a $50 charge either on the lien or somewhere that the homeowners association charged. And the debt collector law firm just sent back something that wasn't verification or validation. And he sued. And he says, I asked them about that $50 charge. And they're supposed to verify with the original creditor, I would think. Who else can you verify with if there was a charge put on by another party? And he won this case based on the fact they couldn't verify that. Now, some of y'all are going to tell me y'all can't find a charge within the mortgage statements or that, you know, is questionable? Yeah. Okay. All right, let's go to 770-4426. You on Thor Radio, do you have a question?
Hey, it was a great show as usual.
Thank you.
I have six back from my FDCPA case from the two parties, separate parties, the debt collector and the attorney firm that I'm suing, and they're identical, almost to the word for word, which is hysterical. And I was prepared, totally prepared, to file my response to a 12B6 knowing that's what they would do. And they come back with jurisdiction and venue because they have nothing to do with Georgia. I mean, I'm like, really? Because, well, the debt collector works in every state in the country. Their attorneys are in Florida. And because they are not, they're saying, because they have no contacts in Georgia. No Torches Act has been committed, and that is the whole, they want to change it, the venue, to the Middle District of Florida, because, of course, they're going back to the foreclosure, which I did not even mention in my debt collection FDCPA case. I mean,
okay, so this is
a
foreclosure case, and they did a foreclosure in Florida, and you're suing who? You're suing the debt collection law firm?
And the debt collector for FDCPA violations.
Okay, and you're in federal court.
And I'm in federal court in Atlanta. And the interesting thing is they filed their answer on time. So I thought, okay, I'm going to get this 26F done right away. I don't even care if I have their response yet. I'm going to go ahead and make sure that I get things in order. So I called both of them on Thursday to set up a time to do the 26F. Did not have anything in my hands yet, right? And they said, well, wait till Monday or Tuesday. Let me get with all the other attorneys and we'll get back with you. So you know what they come back with? They want to stay the 26F until after the judge rules on their motion to dismiss, because otherwise it'd be a waste of time.
Yeah, I mean, that's normal. Yeah, that's common. I mean, and they can ask for that. Don't sweat it. Just let them stay it.
So it's no big deal.
I don't see why you would be in the wrong venue if you're suing in federal court and Georgia is your domicile or your place of residence, regardless of where the collection action took place. You know, federal court is proper jurisdiction,
here,
in my opinion. I'm sorry?
Yeah, the collection action took place in Georgia. Everything they said.
Doesn't matter
to me
where the collection action took place. Yeah. It doesn't matter where the collection action took place if that's where you reside and
yes,
if there's federal question, which is under the FDCPA, then I don't see how they would complain that you would have to bring it to Florida where? To Florida District Court? What difference does it make? I mean, you got to always watch it. They're always going to try to tie in the foreclosure with the debt collection action, and they're not one and the same. They're totally different. So that's the only thing they can do, and that's the only thing they're going to do. Oh, this is about a foreclosure. No, this is about a debt collection. No, the foreclosure already happened. This is about a debt collection. No, it's about a foreclosure. Well, it's you were collecting the debt. You're a debt collector, and I'm a consumer, okay? And we understand that foreclosure is debt collection. So, okay, you can make it about a foreclosure, but this is not about the foreclosure. This is about your debt collection. So you have to keep it there in the center of the road, all right, and you stay there and say, what venue or jurisdiction is appropriate when it will be federal law? I couldn't take this down into a state court. Okay, you're not suing on Florida.
No, they want to take it to the consumer district court in Florida.
Why would you take
it
there? Well, what's the difference between district court in Florida or district court in Georgia? It's the same thing. You live in Georgia, so you're allowed to bring the action.
It was very strange, and they've obviously been playing tricks already. As a matter of fact, they haven't even mailed me the documents from Atlanta yet. They were sent a week ago, supposedly, and I haven't received them. It took 4 days to get the documents. Well, they said they mailed them on the 19th. I still don't have them, and I live in the same city that they're mailing them from. The ones from Florida took 4 days instead of two, and they said they mailed them on the 19th. I get documents from Florida all the time. It takes 2 days. So they're playing tricks already.
Have
they're
they done
games.
The foreclosure already?
That's still ongoing. It's still ongoing.
See, that's what I thought. So that's why they're saying that. They're saying that there's a pending action going on with the debt collection, and that's maybe why you should have filed it in Florida. I can see why they would say that, because the collection is ongoing, and I can see why, you know, they would say, well, why didn't she just file that in Florida? And, of course, that would kind of save them, you know, money from getting an attorney in Georgia, and I don't know. You know, I'll be honest with you. I think you're better off in Florida than you are in Georgia. Okay, 11th Circuit is, you know, yeah, you got the McCullough Raymond case, you got a couple of cases in 11th Circuit, but you know, Georgia's more of a creditor friendly state. Florida's kind of been turning the corner on debt collection action, so I think you would have better success along with your Florida consumer protection laws. I think you would be a little better off in Florida. So I don't know why you filed it in Georgia other than you live in there, but that's fine. But you know,
because
just
I'm
have
disabled.
To say, well, I don't live in. Okay, well, if you live in Georgia, that's where you live. You know, just because they're taking a collection action against the property in Florida, you can own property anywhere. You know, I don't live there.
So be honest with you. That's where you want to bring in the 1692I and say, well, they are taking a judicial action. So, yeah, I mean, just, you know, stick on the fact that you reside in Georgia. And that's where you are able to take the action. You're a resident of Georgia.
Remember the cases we talked about? There's a new one in Atlanta that Amy Totenberg did saying that debt collectors could not foreclose. It was a really good case, and we talked about it on the call, and I cannot find it.
I don't remember, but you should be able to Google it and find it.
I just remember
about Amy Totenberg. I mean, you know, you got to understand she's only one of two really on the consumer side, but you got other cases in Georgia that, you know, McCullough Raymer and a couple of other ones, and you got the CFPB that's went after several of those foreclosure mills down there. So you can parrot and piggyback on some of their language out of their cases. So you got enough. Just go forward and be like, I'm a resident of Georgia. Are you trying to say I have to go down to Florida and file a case when I'm a resident of Georgia? And you should be fine. All right?
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. All right, let me get to these other two calls. Let's go to 630-3555. Sam, what's going on?
Oh, thank you, Brother Sharif, for taking my call. I'm glad to also know you know my name. I appreciate that. My question to you is this. When you're filing a federal complaint for FDCPA violations, how do you not put in your complaint that you have a default if it's a debt collector? How do you allege in your complaint without alleging a default with the original creditor?
Why would you need to do that?
Okay. Why would you even need to put it in?
Yeah, because it's not about the debt, right? It's not about
the default.
Correct. You're not in foreclosure. So foreclosure, you would bring up issues about you denying a default. In debt collection, it's about what, Sam? Behavior and conduct. So what difference does it make about the debt and being in default? The debt is in default. That is why you're subject to the FDCPA, and there's certain requirements that you didn't follow. So it doesn't matter whether you're in default. The fact that you're in default puts you within the purview of the FDCPA. So you don't have to talk about the default.
Good.
They can say, oh, you owe the debt. And you're like, okay, yeah, great. I mean, that's not what I'm talking about. I mean, you can say I owe the debt all you run. I deny that, but this is not about the debt. It's about what? The behavior and conduct. So what difference does it make whether it's in default?
Okay. So, in a foreclosure federal complaint for behavior, you allege the default. But in a debt collector,
in a foreclosure federal complaint, no. In a state foreclosure, then you want to focus on a default or denial, specific denial of the default. In a FDCPA case, it's not necessarily about the debt. It's about the behavior and conduct.
Very good. Okay, Brother Sharif, as always, thank you for all the data you send us. I appreciate that always, and I'm letting you know right now. And I appreciate the consistency of the information that you give us out here each and every week.
Thank you,
sir. Appreciate
it
more and more. All right, thank you.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. Good luck. All right, last caller, 267-3782. You're on Thor Radio. Do you have a question? 267-3782.
Oh, yes. I apologize. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah, cool. Yeah, we got you.
Oh, yes. I was distracted. I apologize. I was just curious.
You distracted while listening to Thor Radio? What were you distracted? What were you reading? The FDCPA, TCPA, FCRA?
How did you guess?
All right, good answer. We're all right with that.
I was wondering if anybody had gotten a call claiming this is a fraud alert and we need you to call this number because some alleged credit card that you have may have been, I don't remember the exact words, but.
Yeah, you never return any calls.
I recently received such a call. And I'm like, that's interesting.
Yeah, no, you don't return any calls like that.
Oh, no. I knew better than that, and I made sure I saved it in my phone. But, yeah, I'm like, that's really interesting. credit card.
Yeah, that sounds like maybe a scam. So you're not going to be able to get them for TCPA. They may be in a foreign country.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, it wasn't a 1-800 number. Now, I don't know if a 855 number is considered. I know some changes were made over the years if that would be considered a toll-free number.
Say that one more time.
I said with the toll-free numbers, I know it's 1-800, it's 1-888, and I didn't know if an 855 was considered a toll-free number. Do you know of an 855 being a toll-free number?
Yeah, 855 is a toll-free number, to my belief, yes.
Oh, okay. But like I said, yeah, I figure it's a scam anyway because I have no such instrument and didn't, you know, unless they got my number from somewhere, give out any numbers, nor do I have any such credit cards.
Okay. All right. Well, did that answer your questions?
No. I was just, the question was if anybody else had those kind of phone calls, more or less. And yes, I agree, it's more than likely a scam. So,
yeah, I wouldn't address any of those phone calls unless you really know who
right.
you're talking to. Usually they're going to ask you to verify some of your Social Security number, date of birth, or address, and you definitely don't want to do that.
Most definitely. That's it. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you. All right. Thanks for joining us. All right. Let me see if I can get in 678-6235 very quick. You have a quick question?
Yes. Quick question. You talked about something that was a lien from a homeowners association, and as a matter of fact, I just received a letter from the attorney that it was now filed with the court for the lien, okay? But what I got confused on, and maybe I need to go back and listen a little bit more in between, is it had fees that were associated with this $1,000, you know, payment that's supposedly due to the Homeowners Association. And I heard the lady say from Georgia, because I'm in Georgia, as you know, how do you handle that again if they are a debt collector? Because that's what they are. They're a debt collector. I don't owe them. And I thought liens were illegal.
I'm not going to necessarily say that's true. You don't owe them now. They're, I don't want y'all to think that. There are certain cases where you do owe them. They're allowed to attempt to collect the debt. They just have to do it based on the requirements of the FDCPA. It doesn't mean that you don't owe them. I mean, they can be collecting and having everything correct. Okay, so, you know, you have to investigate each case individually to see if you don't owe. Just because they're debt collectors don't mean you don't owe them. They're allowed to collect the debt, okay? They're allowed to ask you for that debt, and if they're right in what they do and how they do it, then you may owe them, all right? But when you're dealing with a homeowner association, the first thing you got to look for, and I don't have much time, is you want to look for the charges that they charge. A lot of times they'll charge you for attorney fees, okay, in advance, which
they did.
It cannot do. If they didn't accrue those charges, if the attorney's telling you, you know, you have to pay for attorney fees, and that homeless association didn't pay those attorney fees, you don't owe them. Okay, attorney fees was not accrued by the homeowners association. They didn't pay them, okay, because your contract's going to have reimbursements for attorney fees or costs. Well, if they didn't pay it, then it's not a cost. All right, that's one. Second thing you want to look for is when they follow in.
If it accrues a collection fee of $80 and then it says
I don't know. You have to look in your contract to see what it allows, what your contract allows. All right?
Okay.
That's
Thank
as further
you.
As I can go for that. But look at the, you know, when they recorded the lien, how much they charge you for that. You know, if they didn't charge you cost, a lot of times it's only $5 or $10 to record a lien. If they charge you more than that, they usually will try to charge you the attorney fee amount to charge to file a lien, which is usually like $125 or so. If that's the case,
no,
that's
it was $259.
You didn't file it.
It was $259.
Okay, who filed the lien though? Did the attorney file the lien, or did the homeowners association
yes, sir.
File the lien?
That's it was the attorney who filed the lien.
Okay, well then that it may be appropriate if your homeowners association declaration and covenants allow for that. All right.
Okay.
But you got to look at any fees that may not be, you know, named in the agreement. All right. But the attorney is going to be a debt collector, and in most instances, you would have to know that.
But that doesn't mean you just, you know, you just go after them as if you don't owe them. If they're acting for a creditor and that homeowners association was your creditor, now there's a difference in homeowners association and management company. Management company works for homeowners association. Management company can be deemed a debt collector, and the attorney collecting for them can be deemed a debt collector. All right? So anybody in between you and the creditor is generally a debt collector. All right?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the question. All right, we only got 2 minutes left. I just want to say I thank everyone for coming. Lori, Layla, Rudy, did you have any closing comments? 10 seconds?
Well,
don't forget the webinar this Saturday. The webinar this Saturday on post-foreclosure, Saturday, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. All right? Also, the last webinar that we did on foreclosure is going to be available here shortly this week. If you, those of you that don't have that, and if you're going through foreclosure, I really highly suggest that you get it, right, to help yourself. Some people are having some great success with that already. Other than that, Rudy, I'm sorry to cut you off. Do you have anything else?
No, sir. I was just going to promote the webinar for Saturday. Tell everybody, please bring a friend, come get educated. Post-foreclosure, this is an opportunity we have not had to get this information. Please be there.
All right, Layla, right quick.
Yes, in light of this, this was a really, really excellent call that we all did today, and I've learned so much, and I can imagine everyone else did as well. But what I take away from this, as we talk about dealing with the debt collector and our spirit and our character and behavior, I would just say in the spirit of settlement, please remember to choose peace because there's wisdom in not picking a fight, even when, you know, there's a fight to be had. But that, back to you, Brother Sharif.
Great. Great information. Lori, right quick, 5 seconds.
Email us, debtshow@yahoo.com. Is that it?
That's right. Yep.
Email us.
All right. Peace. Thank y'all for showing up. We'll see you this week. An announcement, Eddie Craig, and Friday, Violence in America Part 2. Be on the email list and be apprised.